Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you, yesterday was a banner day in Action Radio. We had our wonderful PR person who's just doing amazing things. You'll notice on our broadcast page, we now have a slideshow. Well, I figured that out yesterday, thanks to Lorianne, a friend of mine who's also a fellow Blog Talk show host here. Anyway, so we got some affiliates there. So we have Grace Care. We have, Strike Force Energy Drinks, and I'm still trying to find a good picture for MyPillow. And so we have MyPillow, Grace Care, and Strike Force Energy Drinks, all at the fifth now. So if you go there and you use our discount code, which is the same for all companies, at least I got that right, YWL, Write Your Laws. Write Your Laws, WYL. English and math are not my specialties. You know, this is why I just talk. All right, so Write Your Laws, WYL. It's a discount code for all of those, which is great because we have amazing thing now where people can make purchases and get big discounts off MyPillow stuff. I think it's 20% off Strike Force and 10% off Grace Care. And so it's really quite interesting that we're moving up. I mean, we're becoming better known nationally. We've got sponsors, we've got affiliates. We're going to have more sponsors. We're going to have I'm doing a ton more interviews. And again, thanks to our amazing PR person. And so I had two interviews yesterday that came up rather suddenly. These things just popped up. And, you know, the opportunity arises. You got to go for it, right? And so I'm not going to say no to an interview, even if it's a liberal source. I think it's probably going to be my favorite when I get to go on the liberal media. That's going to be a blast. Anyway, so two things happened yesterday. One was the show with Brian McLean, and that's on TNT Radio. I got details on my Facebook page. I think I made those posts public so you can see it. If not, I'll do that after the show. But go to TNT Radio and Brian McLean, McClain, and you'll be able to catch a show there. I was there for an hour, and I was also there for an hour with James Grundvig, and that's at Unrestricted Truths. And I just posted a video on my Facebook page there. It took a while to find it. And so with the Unrestricted Truths, I think it's AmericanPeriscope.com or something like that. So two big interviews yesterday, and they both went over extremely well. One is audio only, and that's Brian McLean, and the other is a video with James Grundvig. So two interviews. So yesterday I was like media all day. It was hysterical. So I did my regular show 7 to 10. Then I had an interview 12 to 1 and then 2 to 3. And after that, I collapsed because that's a lot of stuff. Anyway, let's get to Shelby. Let's have some fun. Let's see if there's more to tell about a really interesting person, Richard Branson, who I'd like to learn more about if that's on deck for today. But we'll find out in just a bit.
Yeah, man. Come with Shelby to faraway places, wonderful beaches, exotic foods. Meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Frenette takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go.
Heading for the big time, Shelby. It's only a matter of time now before we explode on the nation and teach all these other hosts how to write bills and make them all citizen legislators and Action Radio hosts, and it's all happening. It's all happening. What do you think of that?
Yeah, well, that's fantastic, Greg. I mean, really, it's a huge contribution to bring that kind of information to the masses. I think most of us as Americans, I hope most of us as Americans really would love to understand our legislation more. And so you brought a way for us to sort of a how-to. So I think that's just incredible.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, not obviously looking for the compliments and stuff, but it's just you look at this and you see the changes that are happening. And there were two completely different hosts yesterday who knew nothing about Action Radio. They weren't even sure of what I did. Then they started reading stuff from our intro materials and things like that. But by the end of the hour, it's like they both want to write bills. One wants to read
the
mandates.
Yeah, I'm not just saying it to be complimentary.
Yeah, oh, I know.
I mean, I really mean
just,
as a citizen. Like, I mean, especially for someone like me who's so insanely busy. Like, I just don't even want to go down that rabbit hole. You've literally made a how-to for people, which is reasonably, you know, time respectful. And, you know, it's a huge, it can really be a huge thing for our country, for our citizens. And, you know, it's, nobody else has done that before. So I feel like it's extraordinary. I mean, I'm not telling it to just make you feel good. I'm really
I know that. And I'm not used to it. I'm not used to it. So
it's
such wonderful praise.
That too.
I just feel weird. Well, it's you know, especially after all the naysayers and the doom and gloom people for you know, most of my life. And it's like, I've been looking for, I knew I'd do something. I didn't know what it was going to be. I didn't know what form it would take. And this is like this complete accident that all this kind of hit upon me of, and plus the technology we're in. So the radio show, the idea of a citizen legislature, my background, which is weird, but all these things fit, you know, it's like God said, okay, I got plans for you, Greg. You're not going to see it until you're like 60. You know, then it'll make sense. Until then, just kind of hang in there. I'm like, okay, fine. You know, so then all of a sudden, and I realized that pretty much everything I've done in some way or another plays a part in creating Action Radio, and that plus the technology. You know, this is your specialty, social media and things like that, and the internet and searches and everything else, and the ability to share this and just have any person, you know, anywhere in the country write a bill that potentially could end up on the president's desk. That's a huge change, and we don't know where this is going to go. That's the fun of it. So, you know, be a pioneer right along with me. Let's see what happens. We'll just keep doing what we do.
Well, I'm so happy to be here. I have limited time today because our schedule has changed a little bit. I have about 20 minutes now. And I heard you say that you were thinking that you'd like to know some more Richard Branson information, which I have full of because I've been sort of immersing myself in his existence and a couple of his really hot topics. So I'm happy to chat about that. First, though, I think most importantly, we should chat about the changes in the cruise ship industry, the CDC, and the vaccination requirements for cruising. Would you like to talk about that first?
Yep.
Okay. So it looks like the CDC has loosened its stranglehold, and they are now really operating, the cruise ships are kind of operating as they see fit with, I wouldn't even call it guidance, probably just, you know, obvious research and with good intention. But they are really, I think, operating as their own companies now, and they've seen an opportunity and advantage of offering to more unvaccinated guests, not all, but more. So what it looks like, for instance, on Virgin Voyages, we have a New Year's solo sailing. If you're single, definitely check it out, travelfun.biz. It's a on Virgin Voyages, an adults-only sailing is opening up to 10% unvaxxed, and there's no restrictions. There's no mask mandates or sections of the ship that Royal had done in the past, or access limited or anything like that. It's not on all their cruises, but it, definitely the ones in the Caribbean right now, because in Europe, the vax situation is still quite high. I can go into that later. But anyway, in the Caribbean, Virgin Voyages is opening up to 10% unvaxxed without any medical clearance or anything needed. The only thing needed is a COVID-free test before they go. Now, they are waiving the COVID-free testing for anybody that is vaxxed. And again, it's only up to 10%, so you do have to pre-register. And that was what I was explaining on my social media to our clientele, anybody that wants to go that's unvaxxed, you want to get your reservation in very soon because it does fill up. But that's a point in the right direction. And Europe is much more stringent. In fact, in some of the ports of Spain and Italy and France, I believe, you have to have been vaccinated within 9 months, which would, for most people, require a booster. And that's a very stringent ruling, and that's by the country, not by the cruise ships. And there is a way to get around that with a medical certificate. And you know, if anyone has questions about that, they can find me at Solo Travel Expert or travelfun.biz. But this is really good news for the cruise ship industry. Most of the major lines are opening up to unvaxxed guests without restrictions, not fully, not the whole ship, but a section of it or a percentage of it. And they aren't all putting numbers on it either. Like one of the cruise lines just says they're opening to unvaxxed and will probably sail with 80% vaxxed, but they aren't holding themselves to stringent numbers, which would also have you, you know, inclined to believe that they're sort of keeping it flexible to allow whoever wants to come. So this is great news for the unvaccinated that have been, you know, unable to travel like the vaccinated. So I'm very happy to hear that. Most people are happy to hear that. Of course, you do have people that are not happy to hear that have canceled their sailings and such for it. But I think
because they might be around people that don't have a vax, and they're that worried about it. I mean, do they go out of their house?
This is all a personal, you know, then we get into sort of personal comfort levels. And, and you know, when you get the vaccine, I think we were all told basically, you know, we're vaccinated, so we shouldn't be worried about the unvaccinated. But then somehow there was this new narrative that the unvaccinated were spreading the disease, which I don't think scientifically that's actually really solid, but that's the messaging that they were giving us. And so, you know, I never believed that, but some of my vaccinated friends definitely do. So it's a tough thing.
Well,
tough thing.
If you look at the new information that's coming out and all the statistics and all the research, the immunity is way lower. The percentage of people that are, you know, vaccinated are getting COVID. They're getting repeat COVID. You know, Brandon has COVID. You know, he has two shots, two jabs,
well,
whoever knows
I
what
don't
else.
Believe anything.
You know. Oh, no, I mean, like I said, you have to put everything through the filter. I mean, I use my logic and reason filter for everything. But from what I've heard from the doctors that I talked to, we do our special doctor show on Thursday. And so the evidence is what it looks like to me is that, A, first of all, COVID for 99% of the population is not that serious anyway. So there's no reason for this panic. B, we have early treatments that work. So even if you get it, you know, if you catch it early, it's still not a big deal. Kids don't have any chance hardly of getting it at all. And most people have been exposed to this and already have immunity. So for many reasons, I'd actually be more worried about being around a concentrate of that many vaccinated people, quite honestly, with the spike protein shedding and other things like that. I think the quote, the unvaxxed, as I call the unvaxxed injured, you know, might want to think about that. Do you want to be around that many vaccinated people? You know, same goes for healthcare. Do you want to have, if you need a blood transfusion or something for a hospital operation, do you want to get spike protein blood, you know, as part of your operation? And I think one day we're going to have, just like we had separate AIDS blood supply, we might have separate, you know, COVID and non-COVID blood supply.
Wow, I never thought of that.
Oh, that's a, well, we talked about that for at least a year and a half now. Yeah, it's a big issue. In fact, I've already talked to people that are thinking of setting up, you know, a vax-free healthcare. And that's probably exactly what they're going to call it. Oh, yeah. Well, isn't going away.
Anyway, this is definitely a good...
Anyway, go ahead.
This is good for travel, that's for sure.
It is.
I'm very excited
it is good for
about
travel.
It. You know, and we've luckily been fine throughout this, which is nice, but I know some
good
people have not been so lucky who have been vaccinated. And it's been a really... We're very excited, let's just put it that way. So we have a New Year's cruise for singles on the adults only Virgin Voyages, brand new ship. And if you'd like to check it out, travelfun.biz. It is not cheap. It's the best. Not the cheapest, the best. It's a very great value, you know.
Yeah.
That's something I try to harp on. I'm not looking for the cheapest people because there's a lot that goes along with that. And a lot
you
of
want value.
That.
I mean, don't people mostly want value? So if you have a bargain cruise, you want a bargain value, and that's going to be at a certain level.
Right.
If you want a luxury cruise, you want a luxury. I think people, when you don't get the value you expect at whatever level you expect, I think that's where the problems come in, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like people's expectations in general were just so freaking spoiled. this country.
Oh, okay. No.
it's like they're just. They expect so much for so little, and what I would say is I am very frugal, but I am not cheap. I definitely shop bargains, but I don't like to spend my time on cheap things. Like, you know, I'm not going to ingest cheap food. I'm not going to have cheap drinks. I want quality if I'm, you know, especially if I'm vacationing. I want a good price for the quality, but I still, I don't mind paying more and not doing the cheapest thing in order to get a better quality of entertainment, a better quality of service, you know, less lines. Obviously, the cheaper you go, the more packed everything is, so you wait longer. Mm-hmm. My time is just – I value my time so incredibly high that I would much rather pay more and get served whenever I want, especially on vacation, rather than wait in line and save money.
Americans don't take vacations, though. I mean, we're like the least vacationed country in the world. It's insane what we have for vacations. What, 2 weeks a year? Europe takes six?
Yeah, it's
Americans,
pretty gross.
Americans don't take vacations.
I've always had... Yeah, I mean, the people that I work for do, obviously.
No, well, you're
because
in the
that's the industry I'm in. But yeah. On a whole, I totally agree with you. In fact, I had a passenger that was American, but had the opportunity. I think she had a dual passport, and she lived in Austria. And she would tell us on the cruises, she came in a bunch of my solo sailings. She would say, I vacation more in America as an Austrian than my American friends vacation in America. As Americans, because she has 6 weeks and we have, 2 to 3. And don't forget, you get sick too. I mean, stuff comes up. You got stuff you got to do. It's not like you consider 2 weeks vacation. I mean, I think 2 weeks is kind of a write-off over the year, between being sick or having events that you have to attend or weddings or family functions or even business conferences. You know, it's like 2 weeks is not, it's messed up. And then when you get to the point where you have 6 weeks, at least in my experience, when I got to the point level of my career, when I had paid 6 weeks, then you can't take it because they have so much work for you. They don't even allow you to take the time you have.
So oh, no.
It's like really a win-win situation. But something I wanted to ask you before I have to go. I heard that Dr. Zelenko died
recently.
Yes, he did. So tell me about what happened. That was so sad. Yeah,
well,
I didn't know.
He was never in great shape. I mean, when I first got introduced to him through a mutual friend, which is incredibly lucky, back in 2020, and he ended up from our first interview, I talked to him after the interview. I said, can we write a bill based on what you said? And we ended up writing a bill that his name is on, because he supplied all the information. I just kind of typed it up, on reforming the emergency use authorization procedure. So we'll never be in this situation again where the early treatment drugs are banned, basically, and the experimental drugs are preferred. And so we wrote that. He wrote a reform of the Food and Drug Administration. It's a great bill. But he had already had lung cancer at that point. He'd had a lung taken out already. He already had heart problems. He was very sick in 2020 when we met. And just raw courage and just absolute dedication and a freedom fighter. And I remember his goodbye message. And we all knew it was a goodbye message. He said, look, keep up the fight. Keep going. Keep seeking truth. Keep asking questions. Don't knuckle under to this stuff. And he was an amazing man. And so I've got my two interviews. I can repost them or I can send them to you. But anybody goes to our regular site, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction, and just put Dr. Zelenko in the search engine at the top of the post. We'll give you a bunch of stuff, but you'll find our episode in there. They're usually pretty good about putting our episodes in, even though it's a more general search engine. But we've got two incredible interviews with him. And plus the other work he did, there's videos, go to Rumble, there's countless videos. He was a worldwide citizen. Everybody knew who this guy was because he came up with the Zelenko
protocol. Well, not everybody, but definitely.
Well, that's true, yeah. Okay, but he was so big in, those of us who were in the early treatment crowd knew about him.
Right,
And Dr. Didier Raoult in Marseille, France, who both came up with the same basic protocol, hydroxychloroquine, zinc, I think azithromycin for pneumonia, vitamin D3, vitamin C, as the early treatment for COVID in the first week. And both incredibly successful. But, yeah, he was an amazing man. He was 49 years old when he died. So, I feel shortchanged.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't have more years with Dr. Zelenko. But, again, here's a guy that was very sick to begin with and still devoted his life to saving others. And whether you agree with everything he said or not, he was a fighter, and he absolutely had everybody's best interests at heart. And he was fighting both for our health and for our freedom at the same time. So fascinating person to have known. And really had the privilege of talking to him. And, and there's a few folks that I've met that are with us anymore. Dr. Walter Williams was on the show back in my WEBY days. Some other folks have gone. Herb London, a brilliant foreign policy analyst, was on the show, and he's not with us anymore either. So it's such a privilege to talk to these folks and actually document them, put them on podcasts for now and for future generations to listen to. But, yeah, he was an amazing man.
Yeah. Well, thank you for giving me that information. I've been interested to ask you because I know you have your finger on the pulse there. I also started a podcast called Cruise Director.
Oh, my goodness.
That's exciting. I'm very excited about that.
Post it on our page? post all your episodes on that page?
I should, yes. Let me get on there. Thank you very much. Cruise Director's coming out, much more sort of the background and entertainment and also, of course, mm-hmm. information. And I've been starting to interview guests, so that's exciting. So I'm looking forward to, we'll have to interview you on my podcast at some point.
Oh, I can't wait. And, oh, that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
That's going to be a great time, yeah. So it's our Cruise and Travel page on Action Radio, Action Radio Cruise and Travel. And so that's where you find that. And, of course, you're free to mention, plug anything else that you do on that page. I mean, you know, we're all one big happy family here. So, yeah, so please feel free. Yeah. So there's life beyond Love Boat, huh? You got things to do.
We could talk about the Love Boat, but I wanted to finish with the Richard Branson kind of
stuff. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay,
go ahead. I think you'll be
next week.
No, you're fine. I just thought that's something that's still relevant, and I think you'll be intrigued. Maybe not happy about all the information, but here's what I would summarize. Mm-hmm. So he's super entrepreneurial in a very almost reckless spirit. Like, he really did take a lot of chances that I don't think most of us have the, not even just courage, but stomach to endure. And he, you know, he lost and he won. But he started really young too, which kind of changes a lot of your perspective. I mean, when you're 15 and you start a company, what do you really have to lose? You're living at your parents' house, right? So you can take risks a lot bigger. And you know, he left school at 15. He was dyslexic. And then he started this student newspaper. I think always from my perspective, his heart has always been very much a humanitarian at heart, just naturally, always kind of thinking about what he could do better. A couple of things that he did at a very young age that were even nonprofits were starting a condom company in a very new time where condoms were kind of very not spoken about, a little bit very embarrassing, uncomfortable. He started
a try
company
buying them.
And of course, well,
trying a young man trying to buy them with like women checkers and women in line behind you. Yeah, it doesn't work. Yeah.
Precisely. You hit the nail on the head. But he worked with that in his marketing campaign. That's what they actually played upon. They actually did a scene with a young boy asking for condoms and what he was thinking and what she was thinking, and then her doing a call over the speaker, like, price out condoms, you know, is a joke. It was very funny. It's very humorous, and it's very much real life. Anyway, they called them Mates, M-A-T-E-S, because the British
Mates?
Company, and they didn't want to call them Virgin Condoms. As you can imagine.
They were called mating condoms. You don't want to say that.
Yes, exactly. Mates is a friend, and mates is, of course, mating. Anyway, he did that because he was hopeful to help kind of break down those barriers for people to start utilizing condoms, which is a huge, like, that's not a business decision you do to make money. You know what I mean?
I want to make this real quickly, because people think that because people are in business and they're in profit, that's somehow bad and that nonprofits are good. You look at the computer. They made a fortune, but we all use those computers. See, there's nothing incompatible with making a profit and starting a business and doing good work. If you don't, you have to produce something that people want, or they're not going to buy it, or things that people need, or preferably both. So that is just as humanitarian to produce condoms and make a profit on it as it is to, you know, be Albert Schweitzer. You're still doing good work. You're doing it differently. But I've never understood this idea that because you're in a business, you know, providing a good or a service that people want, you know, the light bulb, the airplane, all the things that we use all day long. Somebody had to invent road tar, you know, all the things that you don't even think about. Somebody had to take a chance and invent those and turn it into a business and take a risk and put it out there. So there's nothing wrong with that. Now, there are bad businesses.
I fully agree with you. And I find it absolutely insulting, actually, that people, it's almost like this mentality of, if you're making money, you're bad and you should be doing everything for free if you really care. And that is asinine and completely insulting, because it's like you don't value someone's time. Like, you know, I could say from my own examples, you know, the services I sell and have sold over the years, whether it be fitness, nutrition, and travel, all of them, actually, people have expected them for free just because, oh, well, you know, you should give the workouts out for free and your time, whatever. It's it's you're doing it anyway. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is my education, everything I've gotten into,
mm-hmm.
social media even. They're like, oh, you know, can't you just do this for me? And I really can't. I really need to charge you. This is my business. Like, it doesn't take you long. I'm like, that's because I worked so hard at training. I put so many years of work into it. That's why it doesn't take me long today. You're paying for the past that I had to train mm-hmm. for free, you know. Anyway, back to Richard Branson, because there's a couple interesting things that I really want to touch upon, because I think you're going to find them interesting. So
okay.
humanitarian at heart, at large, I feel intrigued that he's done so much for people and his businesses. He's always trying to serve people at a higher level and see how he can do it better. I'd also note that his galactic space travel, you know, he's always been very intrigued with space from a young age. His grandfather told him, you know, look up the sky. There's more stars in the galaxy than there are sand grains on in the Earth. And that is an incredible, fascinating thing to even consider. It's very hard to conceptualize. But I think that got him into sort of looking out to space and then understanding such world problems that we're having. And the idea that we can, you know, change our transportation methodologies.
Mm-hmm.
He has been a big part of starting this. He wants space to be for everyone, is what he said. And I really believe he means that. He's like, space shouldn't just be for the rich. He's like, I want to bring it to more average people. So he's trying to figure out a space flight program that would, like, basically you could launch into space and then get down back to Earth. Very quickly, and obviously kind of like a hyper speed traveling option on Earth, which
mm-hmm.
is fascinating to even think about.
Yeah.
However, I would also mention he's got a very, very global, his global view is much more, I would say, left winged, and he's very much a proponent of Obama, has been at his house and things like that. I remember seeing a post of him saying, you know, in the United States, there's X amount of deaths by guns every day. And in Japan, there's been one per year. And these types of things, I think, oh, my goodness, that's so hard for me to digest, because I'm very much an American. And I know the Constitution has protected us from being like Japanese. And I've been to Japan and I love the Japanese people, but I do not want to live in Japan because they don't have lots of choices at all. They are totally owned. Like, from getting, it's like even their prostitutes, oh, they're like, prostitutes are born geishas. That's how that was. The geisha is a basically born orphan prostitute, where they owe money to their caretakers while they're maids for them. And this whole systematic idea that, you know, the Japanese people, I love them, but they're also under the thumb of the ruler, and it's not a free country. And so, yeah, they don't have guns. And
yeah, look at the justice
killed,
system. Well, they don't use guns; they use knives. I mean, Japan has a several thousand year tradition of edge weapons, from knives, swords, everything else like that.
But that was mostly because they were so suppressed; they had to do all these, like even Tai Chi and karate. All of this was like at one point, I believe, in Japan or China. I can't remember which one, but one of the Asian countries, they banned like anything. They didn't allow you. They were even looking at farm tools as weapons. And
that's where they come from.
You know,
they didn't allow
nunchucks. You to have weapons at all.
Yeah, nunchucks is a farm weapon. You look at those little scythes, those tiny little things. Those are farm implements. So that was the base. And I think it was Japan and China. They had very similar oppressive dynasties over the centuries. And so you had the samurai in Japan, and I'm sure you had the warlord class over in China and other places. Korea has a long history, too. So a lot of these nations have incredibly long histories of oppression.
Of oppression,
so
that's not where I want to go. So it's funny that he doesn't seem to see that. He doesn't seem to see that picture. But I genuinely believe, my belief is that he has a very genuine humanitarian heart. However, I do have a friend also that has told me that I actually know who this woman is. She's from around here. She's a kind of like a relationship dating matchmaker. And she goes to his island and does these like enormously elaborate, incredibly expensive dating services on his island, where he kind of as this man put it, acts like Mr. York. So Rourke, you know, on Fantasy Island.
Rourke, yeah. Probably, or whatever. No, not
yeah.
Howard. Yeah, him. Mr. Rourke.
I feel like
Ricardo Montalban.
Like Richard Branson is very multifaceted and probably
okay.
not in alignment with a lot of the beliefs that you guys hold here on Action Radio.
I don't
Radio,
care.
But in the same, in the
I
same
want him on the
breath,
show anyway.
He's a humanitarian, and
yeah.
I'm very I was very pleased to cruise with him and celebrate his birthday with him, and that was very cool. So anyway, I look forward to chatting with you next week. I've got to run. I've got a lot of appointments this morning, but thank you so much for the time, and I hope to see you guys all. On my podcast too, on Cruise Director. But thank you so much, Greg, and congratulations on just your show going forward and just reaching more people. I'm Shelby. You're fabulous. Bye bye.
Thanks, Shelby. And let's get your match. Oh, she's already gone. Well, you know, I want her matchmaker on the show. You know, and we're going to talk. We've never had a matchmaker on Action Radio. And of course, you know, from that, I want to get Richard Branson on the show. And this is how we do it. We just kind of work our way through, and just from guest to guest to guest. Everybody knows somebody. And we just kind of work our way all the way up to the most amazing people on the planet, Richard Branson being one of them. I don't have to agree with him on everything. I don't care. He's interesting, you know, and that's what makes it fun for me. So let's get – in fact, I got Josie on the line right now, so we'll get to her report here. But, yeah, this actually was timed well. I really felt like Shelby only had so much time and a lot to say really quickly, and so we had to get through it. But, of course, I always have a million questions for everybody anyway. All right, let's get to Josie's report, the Latina report. Be right back. She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossi knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossi. Hey, Josie, what's going on? Buenos dias. Dobre utra.
Good morning. Good morning. Dobre utra. Buenos dias.
Guten Tag. Konnichiwa, Josie-san.
How are you?
We're going to bring new languages every time we do this. G'day. How's it going? Accents of languages.
Yeah.
Bonjour, mon ami.
Bonjour. You know,
that's
like,
French with a Spanish
Shelby
accent, folks.
Saying,
yeah, go ahead.
Shelby was saying that she loves Japan and all that, but she wouldn't want to live there and blah, 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 blah,
uh-huh.
all that. And, you know, I've been to, I believe, about 25 countries.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like the United States of America. Nothing. I don't care. That's why everybody comes here. This is the best country in the world. We
oh,
have
yeah.
everything here.
Well, but see,
you know?
I'm the eternal optimist, but I also think of where we can
oh, yeah.
be. You know, and there's so much more that we mm-hmm. can do. And a lot of people are like, this is the greatest, freest country on earth. Well, no, it's not. It's not compared to what we could be. I never compare us to other countries, but compared to what we could be. We're not even close, especially these days. I mean, it's pretty tragic. But it was interesting growing up in Canada and Australia and the United States, which are fairly comparable.
Yeah.
They speak the same language. You know, two of them are originally British Commonwealth, and the United States being the one that rejected the British Commonwealth in a war. And Canada, Australia kind of gradually pulled away, but not completely. So there's still that governor general tie. But overall, they're fairly
yeah.
similar. Australians are a little crazy. Because they all come from Irish prisoners. Canadians are like
mm-hmm.
the mellow Americans that wanted to be loyalists. So all the quiet Americans went up to Canada and became Canadians.
Okay.
Canada now hates me. Sorry, Canada. Our audience
but
in Canada
even,
is growing. But yeah,
even
it makes
though,
sense.
Even though we're going through in America,
mm-hmm.
There's a light at the end of the tunnel coming soon. Even though we're going through all that, it's still the best country in the world.
Oh,
and
sure. Well, this is the potentially to
here.
Fix itself. Yeah, we're the only country with the potential to fix what's wrong. You know, you look
yeah.
at other countries, they've got
yeah.
class oppression, they've got race oppression, they've got government
oh, yeah.
oppression, they've got all things. We at least have the tools to fix our country. Now, right now, we're under a Marxist dictatorship. We're under leftist oppression.
Exactly.
But we have the potential. I mean, do you think Action Radio would exist in Cambodia? No, I'd have been killed already. I'd
no
be long
way.
Gone. Yeah, I'd be gone. If I was in Cuba, how long do you think I'd last in Cuba? Yeah, I've been shot and killed as a teenager.
Oh, yeah.
Just I'd open my mouth and it'd be all over, right? So I'm glad I'm here. Believe me, I'm glad I'm here. You know, but even when the worst, you know, happens here, we can still fix it. And I think that's what really separates us from the rest of the world. I never really thought about that till now.
Yeah.
But we have the potential to fix these things. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the poor people
mm-hmm.
in the eyes of other people, other countries, they're very rich. They're very rich. You know,
mm-hmm.
except for the homeless and the bumps in the street that don't have anything. But like for poor people in the neighborhood, they have so much compared to other ones. But
oh, yeah,
anyway,
we figured out
okay,
go ahead.
Yeah.
You first.
I wanted to mention what's going on at the border right now. I only have a little bit of that. The caravans, they have been blocking for 28 days. The main streets, they come towards one of the biggest highways in Chiapas, Mexico, that heads towards the U.S., big truckers, you know, bringing all kinds of goodies from Mexico. They have blocked the whole highway for 28 days until the Mexican government.
This is a border crossing? Is it a border crossing or is it just in Mexico?
No, not the border crossing, Jessica Chiapas. They have blocked the streets for 28 days. The trucks were stranded, couldn't move. And there's a lot of them, too, kids, but mainly men are coming. They were doing this until the Mexican government talked to, immigration for them to start processing their paperwork. So they gave in, and that's what the American immigration is doing. They're processing, but I think they're going to make them wait a little bit because of the elections coming up here, and American people are very, very upset what's happening with all the illegals coming in this country. So they started the processes, so they opened the highways now, but they got their way. And, you know, these people are illegal. These people are invading Mexico. And a lot of the Mexican people are complaining and upset. They said Biden should just open the border for them and let them come in, blah, 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 because they kind of like restricting it now. And I'm saying to a big message on Facebook, I'm saying it is Mexico's fault that is allowing all these people to come in the country. They wouldn't have this problem if Mexico didn't open the doors over there for them to come in. And that, you know, so it's, I blame the Mexico country because they have a communist president, and I'm pretty sure it's getting billions of dollars under the table from our government, corrupt government. And that's exactly what's going on.
Hmm.
So I blame Mexico.
If you get a chance to investigate. If you can investigate, or if you know anybody that knows anybody that can find out if there are some secret payments going to Mexico, it wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, I mean, if nothing that the Brandon,
we know already.
I can just take a look at their accounts and where they're spending money. Yeah. Well, I still think, and I think you agree with me, we talked about this before, that when Trump gets back in office, the American military really needs to be on the border and needs to take out the cartels like they took out ISIS. You know, if it's okay for us to take out ISIS, it's certainly okay to take out the greatest threat to our security right now, which is the Mexican cartels on the border and all the folks they're bringing in.
Yeah.
And then we have to, do asset forfeiture to seize all the property and things, make it impossible for the illegal aliens to live here so they go home. You know, you have to make the situation worse here than their own country for them because they have no right to be here. And so a lot of this has to be reversed. See, the hard part's going to be, you know, people think once they're here, they're here. And what we have to do is create a situation you might be here temporarily, but don't get too comfortable.
Make it hard.
Because we're going
to
make it impossible for
you.
You're going to want to go. You're going to want to leave. And that's what we need to do.
And on this caravan that arrived in Chiapas, Mexico, there's a lot of Chinese. A lot of Chinese people are there. And the cameras were going around them, and they were hiding. Like, they don't want to be seen. So they were interviewing this guy but not showing his face because China will come after them immediately. Oh, yeah.
Which are they coming from mainland China? Are they escaping from China? I mean, how secure is the Chinese border? Or they have so many people they don't care.
They're coming from China. Yeah, they're coming from China.
See,
and, you know, the Cubans are doing right now, Greg.
What's that?
They're leaving Cuba to go to Nicaragua and from Nicaragua. That's how they're coming in. But they're not coming straight from Cuba to America.
No.
They're not allowed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, especially the people with money. Those are the folks that anybody that is able to accumulate money or had money in Cuba, they're going to use that to get out. People in China that made money, you know, former people in Hong Kong, I'm sure they're trying to get out. In fact, before the British lost the lease in Hong Kong, there were a ton of Chinese folks that went all up and down the West Coast from Vancouver, British Columbia, and Canada, Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, and San Diego have huge Chinese populations, you know, from Hong Kong. Because they knew it was coming. They didn't want to live under Chinese oppression. And so they left. And the ones that are still there trying to fight the good fight, you know, China's too big. China's bigger than Hong Kong. And they're going to win. You know, but we'll see what happens. But Chinese have always come to see what is a mess. But when I was in San Francisco, see, here's one thing people forget, too. Everybody knows Ellis Island in New York, right, where the immigrants came in from Europe.
Yes.
But they don't know Angel Island in San Francisco. Now, Angel Island, there's two big islands in San Francisco Bay, Angel Island and Alcatraz. Alcatraz, I believe, isn't that Spanish for pelican? Or an old Spanish word?
Know.
Or Portuguese word? It's not? What's Alcatraz mean?
It's like a trap, Alcatraz.
Okay. This is someone, that's one of the myths out there then for those of us that don't speak Spanish or Portuguese. Anyway, but Alcatraz Island, that's where the Alcatraz prison is. But the other island is Angel Island. And Angel Island was the immigration point for all the Asians coming to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't know that. So there's a long history of Asians coming to the United States. Look at the Chinese
and
the railroad.
Yeah, I don't know much about it. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a fascinating thing. And, of course, you know, me being a tour guide, you know, being through Chinatown, you know, every day, you know, because you had to, right? Chinatown, North Beach, the Italian section. And it's interesting how Italians and Chinese always seem to have neighborhoods next to each other because they got here about the same time. Anyway, but the Chinese in Chinatown have long had a pipeline directly to China, you know, to bring in people. And it's really funny. You go there, and it's the only place I know in the world where you'll see the Taiwan flag, you know, next to the Chinese flag. It's really interesting because they don't care. It's Chinese and Chinese in Chinatown. It doesn't matter. You know, same language, same culture, same people, just different governments. You know, one free and one totally oppressive. But, yeah, so the Chinese have always come to the United States, you know, from the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wouldn't surprise me the Chinese are coming in, you know, the illegal ones are coming into the southern border because there's enough Chinese, you know, between L.A. Chinatown and San Francisco Chinatown and Seattle Chinatown, you know, and all that, to the, even if they're going to Vancouver and Canada. You know, there's a whole bunch of folks. There's a lot of places Chinese can mix in very quickly,
hey,
which
Greg,
is too bad. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Do you still have family in Canada?
I do. I don't know them very well because I left when I was 8 years old. But, I've got family
so
in Canada and family in Australia.
Them?
Not really, no. I just it's a long story I'm not going to go into now. But, my
That's
family
okay.
is something else. I've sort of been independent for a long time. Well, yeah, they just were kind of abandoned each other, and I think it was better off for me to stay away from them. So I did. But I do have family in Canada and I have family in Australia, which at some point I'm probably going to meet. You know, because I think I'll be up in Canada. It'd be interesting to see relatives that I don't know, that are family. But Toronto, where I'm from, I have relatives. And in Adelaide, South Australia, there's a bunch of penguises, a lot of them. And they're about to find out they have an American cousin when this show gets really big. You know,
hey, Cousin Vinny.
Yeah, they're going to show up. Yeah, it's like, hey, this is my rich American cousin. Hey, come on in. Or they'll be Australian. G'day.
Hey, my rich
Australian cousin. G'day. How's it going?
Is coming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's going to be funny.
That's
no, I'll
cute.
Go to Adelaide and hopefully I'll do some Australian media at some point. We all have to go on a worldwide media tour, you know, see if I can bring some reporters.
Yeah.
You know, we'll all
That's
take off
cool.
around the world and go. It'd be great. Are you kidding? Bring freedom to the world, especially if there are citizen legislative conventions in different places.
Yeah.
That would be fabulous.
But in order for you to go back to Canada, they're going to have to get rid of that communist. They have their dictator in your country.
I'm taking a jab. I'm not taking a jab to go back to Canada. I won't do that.
No. They put you under quarantine when you arrive, and you have to shove that test up your nose, which is like getting a vaccine, according to John Hopkins.
Yep.
You know? It's sad. But, hey, Greg, I was watching a video from Chile because I wanted to see what's going on in Chile right now with a communist dictator left. President that stole the election with the machines in Chile like they did in Venezuela, like they did here, and like they did in Colombia not long ago.
How about that?
So I was watching, and you know, the communists, whenever they get in office, they promise everything, that they're going to do this and this and that, and they make it look so beautiful, especially for the poor people. That's what they did in Nicaragua with Daniel Ortega, the dictatorship in Nicaragua, you know. But I was watching this story in Chile. A lot of the you know, like Cherokee Americans, those are called from Mapuche. It's a group like the originals from Chile, you know. And the government is trying to take a lot of their land, farms already, you know. They're going around. Because they're trying to bring huge companies to buy, like, this huge forest to get rid of all the trees, to sell them for wood and all that. So it's a commotion going on already in Chile with this group Mapuche, you know. So it was very interesting watching it last night. But that's what and they're hitting them with not real bullets. What do you call those things, Greg?
Oh, the rubber bullets?
Yes, yes. Man, this guy, he really got hurt. They must have shot him about 15 times, this poor guy, man. He's a leader of this Mapuche group.
Rubber bullets are still bullets. I mean, they're made of rubber. They say they're non-lethal, but they're still traveling at rifle speed. You know, rifles go at 2,000 to 3,000 feet per second.
I know.
And I want you to think about that. Just to put that in perspective, that's half a mile per second.
Yeah.
All right. You know, so a mile is 5,280 feet. So if you're going 3,000 feet, you're over half a mile per second. That's pretty fast. You get hit with something, I don't care if you get hit with a ping pong ball at that speed, it's still going to hurt a lot.
It's still going to hurt you, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy lifts up his shirt and around his thighs and all that, where they hit him so many times.
No, they'll kill you. I mean, you can get killed with rubber bullets. It's just, you know, it's harder to do, but it can be done. You know, people die of rubber bullets. Not generally, you know, it's more a torture thing. And it's designed to, you know, suppress crowds and the rebellions and riots and all the things governments don't like of people actually, you know, being exercising their rights. But so that's what rubber bullets are for. It's crowd control.
Yeah. Hmm. But, so that's what's going on in Chile, you know. Because when communists enters, you know, I was crying that night when these people stole the election, you know, because I lived there through communists, and I know how bad the people fight against it, the communists. And a lot of people that have money were the ones that fled right away, like what happened in Cuba, you know. A lot of people with money, they were the first one out on a private plane or whatever, you know. They were out of there, and so it just breaks your heart.
Well, it's a strange thing about the human condition that the worst people in the world, or worst people in a country, end up running it. You know, the most powerful, most corrupt, least humanitarian, least people with any kind of values whatsoever end up in control. And this happens over and over again. Elections are stolen exactly the same way, and no one stops it. No group of people stops it. You look here, our election was stolen. We know the election's stolen. Most people can't even admit that the election was stolen. You know, but we know it was. And yet the geldings, you know, the opposition, the people who should be fighting for this country, who swear an oath to the Constitution, have done nothing. Absolutely nothing about
it. They will.
Well, maybe.
It doesn't seem like nothing is happening, but it is happening. It will happen.
Okay.
Let me
know when.
This time it's going to be different, Greg. This time it's going to be different, and they already know it. That they will not get away this time. So they're trying to do everything and anything because there's nothing they can do. Nothing.
Until we get rid of mail-in voting and massive absentee voting and just ballots mailed out. You know, those are the three. Those are the big things we need to change, and drop boxes and all that stuff. Got to get rid of all that stuff. You know, but I'm just
My husband's cousin. You know, he's very connected with Mike Flynn, and a lot is going on that he was telling us last night. And he said what's going to happen towards the election is November 3rd. When is it that we started voting? I forgot. But
I think it's first Tuesday in November. So I'll take a look.
November 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
He said there's probably going to be a lot of shootings at the polls. So we're going to have to bring the National Guard probably because this is their last leg. This is it. They're going to try to cheat, but they're not going to be able to cheat this time. We're not going to let them. So there's going to be, he was telling my husband, probably a chaos of shooting everywhere and all those too scared people not to go out and vote. So we need to go out and vote.
Oh, we have to go out and vote. Well, it's interesting. Different areas of the country are going to handle this differently. The socialist areas, you know, you might see all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when the Black Panthers in Philadelphia, you
the
know,
Black
brought
Panthers, yes.
police nightsticks and clubs to the polls saying, you better vote for the Democrats. You know, I mean, a
yep.
blatant, open, not just voter suppression, but voter assault, you know, and threats of violence. November 8th is Election Day this year. So
mm-hmm.
that's going to be interesting. Now, have you heard anything about the primaries? Have you? Is there any major cheating that has been discovered in the primaries? Or are they not worried about that yet? They seem to be going pretty well.
I haven't heard about the cheating yet, but I mm-hmm. know what I know is a lot of conservative people, not necessarily Republicans, are in full force right now, going
mm-hmm.
out, knocking door to door. I have met a lot of people. Some of my friends are going out, you know, to vote. And Mike Hill just got in a little late because a lot of people were really asking him to run.
Why?
And,
I'm curious.
He's doing very well, actually.
Yeah. You know. See, now, just for those that don't know, we have a local race here, Michelle Salzman and Mike Hill. Mike was on my show a whole bunch back when he was in office, back when I was in WEBY. Michelle Salzman, and we're trying to get her back on. She's requested to come back on. I'm just working with her folks to get her back. Mike Hill over Michelle Salzman, or, you know, I mean, it's not my district, so I'm just kind of watching this. I like both of them.
Yeah, that's true.
But Mike Hill has he's probably better connected with the district. He was in office longer. But, Michelle, do you have an objection to Michelle Salzman? You know, she's only been there one term, so it's hard to do a lot your first term because you looked upon her as, you know, the kid.
I think he's a lot better, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who's Mike's
he's
better
lot,
or Michelle's better? He's better?
Mike Hill is better. People like him better.
Okay.
So now people were begging him, please, you have to run. And he came to my store and we talked for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't want to talk on the phone and stuff like that. So he comes to my store and we talk
about. Well, ask him to come on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Bring him back.
Okay.
You know, I'd love to have him on to find out what his issues and priorities are this time. Yeah.
I would invite him to come back.
Yeah. Well, I've invited him several times. I haven't heard from him. So, Mike Hill, come on back to Action Radio.
Yeah.
Come on back, Mike. Come back.
Come back,
while
Mike.
You're at it, yeah, we'll get Matt Gaetz back while we're at it. Let's get everybody back.
Yeah, we need to.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were knocking door to door for Ron DeSantis. And really and truly, I mean, it is nice to do that in full force, but Ron DeSantis is going to win because he's done so much good for this state, you know. Even though at the beginning he was listening to those idiots about the mask and about closing our beaches, and I was very
disappointed.
Well, see,
I want him to explain that. I want to know why he went for lockdowns and stay at home and safer at home and all this other absolute nonsense. I mean, he was as bad as anybody initially. Now he really reversed it fast. Like within a month, I think he totally changed it. Well, that's not working.
Yeah.
You know, but he still did it though. So in other words, his heart wasn't there initially for freedom. He didn't, like all of us objected initially, said this is wrong.
People.
Okay.
Yeah, he was listening to the wrong people and trying to please because the older folks were scared to death, you know, and some people pushing it, you know. So,
well,
he
shouldn't
have
been scared. He should have taken away their fear and said, no, this is not, you know, Dr. Fascist is lying to you. I mean, that's what we should have done.
Yeah.
I got a question, though. In this day and age with electronic medium and social media and all the ways that we have to connect with people, does knocking, and plus the security, you know, all the illegal aliens in this country now, does door knocking work? Do people open their doors? It seems to be extremely inefficient. I mean, before, you know, in the old days we had phones, you had to call up everybody, but, you know, that's why they knocked on doors. But these days, does door knocking really work as a political tactic?
They had a good successful Saturday this week, actually.
Okay.
My girlfriend went with her husband for 5 hours out in the street. And they program the whole thing on their phone, and they have to go to this house, that house. So they were being guided which house to knock and all that.
How do they know which house to go to?
I don't know.
Well, think about that. Wait a minute. Just think about what you just said. You know, talk about the Big Brother state, the surveillance state. How do people use a phone app to know which house to go to? That's scary, right there.
I can ask my girlfriend.
Yeah, I think I can guess.
And they did. What?
Well, here's my guess. My guess is because Florida has this insane law, you know, where your name, phone number, address, email, birthday, other stuff. It's published. Party registration.
Yeah.
You know, it was one thing when people had to go to the elections office to look anybody up. That took effort.
Mm-hmm.
But now that it's online, it's on the internet, anybody can look up anybody in Florida. You know, and
yep,
I have a bill to stop that.
So.
So do you know my bill to stop that, right? The one, the Florida Voters in Security Act? I'll send it to you. Get that one to Mike Hill. If he wants to do something good. In fact, I gave it to Michelle Saltzman last year, and I was talking to one of her staff members, and she didn't favor it. So I don't know if Michelle saw it or not, but I didn't get past the staff member, which happens, you know, the gatekeepers. But Mike, if Mike wants to do something really good, now we got Bianca in the line, so Bianca, I'll get you in a second. But there are three parts to the bill. The first bill takes all that information offline. Okay, if somebody needs to find out a judge, a law enforcement officer, you know, anybody, it's like a normal search and seizure thing. If someone needs to know your address from the voter registration rolls or to check whether you're a legal citizen or things like that, duly certified government law enforcement or the proper official, they should have access to that information. I don't have a problem with that. Okay, that's how you find out people. They have to be able to reach that. However, it should just be on the internet, you know, for anybody to look up, because anybody wants to look up anybody else. You know, Kavanaugh, there was a guy that tried to assassinate Judge Kavanaugh. Okay. How do you think he found out where he lived? He probably looked up online. And that's a different state. But all of us are vulnerable, especially as we get more public, which is going to happen. You know, so all of us are going to get, you know.
But I think famous people and Supreme Court and all that, the addresses are not published.
Yeah, but why should they get special treatment? Why should they get special treatment?
Well, I don't know, but they're not. And the reason people have it is because the radical criminal communist left government fraud running our show give it away, just advertise their addresses so all the criminals can come after them.
Exactly. So why should your address or my address or anybody else's address be any less safe than a judge's or a police officer's or a deputy sheriff or anybody else?
True.
That's discrimination. That's unconstitutional. That is unequal protection of the laws. You can't do that.
I agree.
You can't give a privilege to government employees and then segregate everybody else and make us vulnerable. You know, they're actually aiding and abetting crimes against anybody.
Mm-hmm. You're right. And you know, Greg, before when you were trying to get an address, when you were trying to get an address from somebody, there was this app, not an app back then, but there was this company that they will charge you and you have to sign up and all that. And it was like $9.99 or something like that for you to get the information. They will get it for you. You have to go through.
See, that's wrong too.
No one
should have access to this information. You know, if a credit card company released this, it'd be called a data breach, or it'd be called a hack. You know, if the information that a private company released were the same if a private company released the same information that the state of Florida releases to everybody in the world, they'd be in jail. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So why? That is the number one. That's my number one priority for Florida, is to change that law. And the second provision, that's the first provision. And the first provision is that all our information becomes private. It's only open to duly certified law enforcement and government officials that have a reason to know with a warrant. Then they can get your information. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Nobody else. The second provision of that is that all voter registrations expire midnight December 31st. So everybody re-registers every year, okay? So all this stuff, well, we have to clean up the voter rolls. We have to do this. That's going to take so much work. We've got several decades. Now, everybody expires, just like the driver's license expires every year.
Or maybe not every year, but it should be like when your driver's license expires, your voting registration should expire. You know, they have an expiration date.
No, I wouldn't tie them together.
So I don't know.
I would do it, if you want to do it every 2 years, you know, if you do it the year of the midterms and you do it the year of the presidential election.
Every four.
Every 2 years. Come on, you can. Like, if you can register your car, you can register to vote.
True.
With citizenship proof.
But it should
proof.
Be electronically what? With fingerprints, so that way you
no,
know,
that
you have the
yeah
I can
the
do evidence that you know that it's that person.
Mm-hmm.
Bianchi,
let's get Bianchi
because
we're gonna have another. We're gonna have our sex and sensuality reporter here. Action Radio goes into brave new territory. We're going to talk sex on Action Radio in just a minute. But in the meantime, Bianchi, unless you want to talk about sex, I mean, I don't care. It's, you know, we're that kind of a show.
Good morning, Greg and Josie.
Buenos dias.
Yes, I hope that you pray for me. There's rain, thunder, and lightning here where I am. Look like Charlton Heston and the Ten Commandments. So I'm beginning to worry.
Did you have to park the seat to get to work today, or were you probably you're probably retired, I'm guessing.
Work.
I don't know.
He's
you
retired.
Have to let me know. He's retired. That's right. Okay, there we go. Yeah. So did you have to part the Red Sea to get out your door? There's a flood out here.
Nearly.
Let me ask the big
But
guy.
You know, I'm going to say, these Democrats, MSNBC had Herschel Walker.
Hmm.
You know, he's a candidate. And the guests for MSNBC used the N-word to describe him, and nothing is done.
Who did? Who said it? Who called him the N-word?
MSNBC. Yeah. Yep.
The,
we should call them
NSNBC. That was on, they were black.
Right.
That was MSNBC.
Right.
Was using the N-word to describe Herschel Walker. And, you know, that's what I say, is that you talk about who is and who's not racist. See, that never will be reported as what it is. And the same, do the same thing with Justice Clarence Thomas. Now they want to go after his wife because of her personal and professional views, as if a woman does not have the right to seek their own liberty without being under the wings of their husband. In other cases, that's what they claim, women's rights. But does she not have rights to say and give her own opinion and work for the causes that she feels dear to her without
sure,
having
the same way
associated
that,
with her husband?
The women Supreme Court justices, you know, their husbands have just the same right to be able to go out and do the same things. Yeah, it's interesting. We've got Dorothy Diana on the line, so we're gonna change topics radically here. But yeah, you guys sum up, and then Dorothy, if you have a comment on what we're talking about so far, feel free. Go ahead, Josie.
Great. Can I say quickly?
Sure.
But see, the Democrats have been manipulating like a bunch of puppets, enslaved to the black people that they cannot think on their own. That's why they were criticizing it and putting down Mr. Herschel Walker. But he came back with a good answer, and just what a gentleman he is. And,
what did he say?
Praise him.
What was his name? I love Herschel Walker. I hope he gets. I think he's a lot higher.
Before, Bianchi?
No. Bianchi, did you post it on the Action Radio group?
No, not yet. I think I'm still in Facebook jail.
What'd you do?
Oh, you are?
Wait, did you think? Did you say something truthful? What do you
no,
think?
I'll tell
you
what
I've
done. It showed a film clip of a criminal breaking into a woman's car while she was in it.
Wow.
And when the guy opened the door, I wrote, shoot. And they claimed that I was promoting violence.
Oh, you're promoting violence, right? Like the person breaking in wasn't. Well, they're victims, you know. It's a bizarre psychology.
Thank you.
If you're riding in a car, folks, you know your holster doesn't work too well. You know, if it's a belt holster, so I don't know whether I'm going to look into shoulder holsters or multiple guns. I haven't decided yet, but there's this if you're riding a car a lot, you got to do different provisions. So let me make Dorothy's point live. And so you guys want to stick around for this. I don't have a theme yet. I've got some really trashy sounding music that's going to be perfect for this report. I got this French bossa nova thing. And so I got a theme kind of working in my head right now as they say, switch gears completely. First of all, Dorothy, welcome back to the show. And do you have any comments on what we're talking about now, or would you like to leap right into our sex and sensuality report?
Hello. How are you?
I'm having a great time.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to say, I love Herschel Walker, and when I tuned in and heard you all talking about him, I got all excited. I'm a big fan, and I love his son, Christian Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the two don't even.
Do you all follow him at all?
It's hard to believe they came from the same family because, you know, you've got the kid who's, you know, he's just very different. And dad's like big football player and kid's like this little wiry kind of kid with the higher voice. It's really funny to see the contrast between the two of them. I mean, they're
gorgeous.
Both great, but they're totally
let me just
different.
Say, Christian Walker is beautiful. He has a huge following. His voice is so loud and he has such a huge following. And I don't know if you've ever heard him speak, but he is a leader, a huge thought leader. The beautiful thing about Christian Walker is he has followers from all the gender identities and all the straights and the gays, and we all love him. So he's a unifier.
Yo, I really don't know much about him personally. I'm just what I've seen. What's his expertise? What are his topics? What's his goal? And you know, what makes him do what he does?
Well, he's a giant red pillar. Let me just say that. So he's got his eyes wide open. He is an advocate for civil liberties, like people's rights.
So are we. This is great.
Yeah, you would so align with him. And I love unifiers. You know, I'm a big
we're unifiers.
I'm very inclusive.
Yeah, we are too.
Yeah, I'm very inclusive with my beliefs. And I love it when there's people that step to the front and center that kind of challenge our expectations. So if he's saying all this, he must be this. Well, he's not. He doesn't fit the stereotype. And he's just a very exciting, beautiful person.
Oh no,
and
I wasn't saying anything against Christian Walker. There's a real difference.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you look at the two of them, and you're, you know, your father and son. Those aren't two people. If I had to pick two people to match up as father and son, aren't the two. Those are the two that I would have picked. But I'm not saying anything against him. But it's really interesting.
He's
you said something really interesting about unifying, and this is something that. They're probably a little on the more to the left than I am, of course, like most of the world is, but that's okay. But when you use words like unifying, you know, and it assumes that folks on the progressive left are unifiers, and folks on the conservative right are segregationists, and it's just the, you know, nothing could be further from the truth. You look at Action Radio, for example. There's not one bill here that is partisan. There's not one bill that isn't written for everybody. There's not one bill that doesn't create more freedom. You know, a universal principle for everybody. We are as inclusive and diverse and all those wonderful things that other people talk about being, we actually are. And so it's fascinating that as me as a constitutional independent, I don't even like the term conservative, you know, but it's just when I hear those words, you know, diverse and inclusive, it immediately, because those are very political. And so I'm thinking to myself, okay, that's us. You're describing us.
Absolutely.
I just want to make
that
point.
Mythology that, well, yes, there's a mythology that one side of the fence is inclusive and the other side isn't. And Christian Walker is a great example of completely conservative, completely constitutional, very strong in it, yet also appeals to progressive left. Like, it confuses them. It's like, I drive a Tesla and I have a Let's Go Brandon sticker
on it. Well, that's good right
there.
That's me. Are you in contact with them?
Let's Go Brandon sticker on it. And it's confusing to people. And I just found that the message is, we're all the same. We're all sort of like torn and kind of sharing viewpoints. And I think it's the media that creates this divisiveness. Most of us can really sit down and have a great conversation and agree on those things, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I believe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a diverse show. You know, we got four people on the line, including me, and there's only one white guy. Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, hey, I'm 25% of the population here. So this is not what you call an exclusive show. We don't care. Anyway, let's go. Let's get into our topics. And let's see, Josie Pianchi, you guys are welcome to join us. Feel free. So I'm going to make a theme for you. So I'll get something that really introduces you. Just kind of like go right into your topic du jour. Hopefully next week I should have that done.
Okay, that's exciting.
Yeah. So what's up? What do you want to talk about?
So I kind of just go through my week and listen, and I listen and have conversations out in the community. And when the topic keeps coming up, I feel like that's a sign from God. Hey, explore this further. Let's discuss this week on Greg's show.
Mm-hmm.
And what kept coming up this week is pornography and addiction, kids, and sexual intimate relationships between adults and how it affects that. And
that's a great topic.
I think there was it's so prevalent. And I think we have this sort of feeling of some years back that it complements an intimate relationship. It can be used to, you know, increase sexual intimacy and excitement. And that myth has sort of gone by the wayside. Studies actually do not show that to be true at all. In fact,
is that Masters and Johnson? Masters and Johnson comes to mind, which were total perverts, as I understand. They did a lot of sex with child porn and some other things. I could be wrong about that, but that's
you know,
they did
really intense things. Yeah, very controversial.
Okay. Well, so but this is where it really started, right? Pornography is a good thing. Everybody should watch. You'll become more sexual. And I think that was that Masters and Johnson. They were like the big sex. And he was a weird guy. He looked like Lurch on the he looked like Uncle Fester, you know, from the Addams Family. You ever see Masters and Johnson? He did. He was a bald head, weird guy, right? So I saw him.
I probably did at some point, but now I have to look him up right now.
Oh, nobody would have sex with him. That's why he talked about it and preached it, because I don't think he was actually doing it. Okay. So, and I don't know Johnson. I think she looked more like, you know, a regular blonde-haired woman. She looked more normal. But this guy looked like Uncle Fester. And so, you know, you're going to tell your deepest inner sex secrets to Uncle Fester? I don't think so.
Yeah, he is Uncle Fester. I just pulled up a picture.
Yeah,
bless
see?
His heart. All right.
Right.
As they say in the South.
Yeah.
You don't have anything
nice
to say. You say, bless his heart.
Sorry, Masters. That's just my take on it. We're blunt here. We don't pull punches, but yeah.
Well, now, we can't judge a book by his cover. I'm sure he had good intentions, and I think there were a lot of benefits to the research. But as you said, science is an ongoing field. It's a field of discovery and curiosity, and good articles, good research ends with, this is some data we collected. We need to do more work in order to know. I mean, any research that says, this is the end-all be-all, here are the facts, move right along, is a lie. So so taking your big body of research, which is a beautiful beginning, like the big bang to all the great sex ed and sexual research.
Did you say the big bang on
years.
A sex report? I'm sorry, I'm just kidding you.
Well, it was like the big kickoff, right? And
no, I'm teasing you, Dorothy.
Yes. I love
we do that here a lot. Okay, fine.
Tease away.
All right, yep.
Well, if the goal is a big bang, porn isn't the answer, is what we're seeing.
Right.
So,
okay.
You know, obviously it's addictive, very addictive. It tells the human brain. There's
how do you know when it's addictive?
Choice.
Yeah, there's so much on this. This is a fascinating topic. You know, because I'm thinking back, and Bianchi can probably throw some stuff in here too. When we were kids, we didn't have the internet, okay? We had Playboy that we had to, you know, whoever the bad boy was in our group of friends would have to steal one. And we'd look and we'd see pictures, okay? That was one thing. That's totally different, the world than now when kids have the internet and they've got phones and, you know, porn is so readily available. You know, are you 18? You know, the 14-year-old boy says, sure I am, you know, and goes right to the internet porn sites. It's a completely different world than when I was a kid.
Let's talk about porn and addiction.
So, hold on, Dorothy. Let me get Bianchi's take on this, too.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Bianchi?
Sure.
Yeah, in the elementary schools, the students get it free. The kids get it free as early as the kindergarten.
What do they get free? Phones or pornography?
Magazines that have sexual explicit characters.
Huh.
Well, currently there's this push in elementary schools, which I think we touched on a few weeks ago. There's a push for really inappropriate sexual topics that are developmentally inappropriate for certain ages. And that's happening. Teachers are ignorant of great sex ed. They're just not educated on it. So they're trying to go with these political trends and please these super left parents. And it's totally whack. And I think that's what the gentleman's referring to.
Yeah. Yeah. Pianki's a regular. Pianki and Josie are regular. So we'll all be chatting here for a bit. You should be back real quick because you're new. Just hold on, Pianki, just one quick. Dorothy, because you are so new here and I don't have a theme for you yet explaining who you are. So you're a sex educator. You're just real quick background so folks know that part.
Yes.
Helps,
so my master's is in nursing and I have three children. I'm a homeschool mom. And I chose to get a post-master's in sexual health some years ago due to the absolute dearth of great sex, body-positive sex ed in the homeschooling community and in our larger community. I began teaching sex ed to children. Meanwhile, I had a lifelong practice that works with women and body trauma and sexual shame in a somatic movement dance practice. And so these two things have sort of come together in recent years, and the entire subject is just so fascinating to me. I love it, and I'm very committed to it. Sexual health.
Yeah. No, that's wonderful. Actually, I want to let folks know that you you're not just making this up. You have serious credentials of what you're talking about. Bianchi, you had a comment. Well, no, it's just, you know, because we have so much fun here with our report. It's great. It's like romantic comedy. You know, the way the dialogue goes back and forth is really kind of fun. Bianchi, you had a comment for Dorothy.
Well, I was just going to tell Dorothy, it really is serious what's going on as far as exposing children to things that adults shouldn't be exposed to. They had one case there in Massachusetts where they had a school workshop conference where they bust in students as young as 12 years old. In the workshops, they had topics such as fisting and whether I should swallow or spit out. It was called a Fistgate conference. So you might want to check on that.
12, as young as 12. Listen, I'm hearing these things, and I have a lot of sources online that are hot on these topics, and I love them sharing it. It's wrong. It's not appropriate. And this is where parenting comes into play. We need our mama bears and our alpha dads, because you are the barrier between your children and traumatic events, which are everywhere in the society. And that's inappropriate what you're talking about. You can see it. I can see it. Most people actually see this. And so it's up to the parents to step up and have regular conversations, be close and connected with their children, and to draw lines between their children and these predators.
Well, why are they doing it, Dorothy? Mm-hmm. Why are they forcing kids to see these really horrible, disgusting things that adults, you know, almost universally
find
disgusting?
I think that's a huge question, and I think there's a lot of deep answers to that that might go beyond just political trends and trendiness. I think there's a more nefarious, probably, agenda.
Yeah, see, that's what I want. That's why I asked you. I want to know the full answer.
Yeah, I do believe that.
You know, it may take us a while over several shows to kind of get this out there, but that's the real key.
Well,
why are they doing it? Nobody's asking why. I want to know. I want to know why.
If you castrate your alpha males, essentially, mm-hmm. by chemical castration and by shame and trauma and turning society against them, and you take your girls and you over-sexualize them, put them out there and tell them their sex isn't really that valuable and it's a way to get things and manipulate and get attention and love and all these things you're doing, and then you make the family unit moot and valueless and silly, the man and woman, the father and mother. I feel like there is an advantage to those in power if these things happen. Also, I think there is a need for more inclusivity, and so those in power prey on our good hearts and our desire for inclusivity and to make everyone feel loved, and they sort of manipulate, and they make these, they put it front and center in the media. They put all these topics have such PR and money behind them, and the ultimate goal is to break us all down and make us weaker as a society so we can be controlled. This is what I really believe.
Mm-hmm. No, that's the perfect answer, and this is why I asked you.
Yeah.
It makes sense. To me, I see it as like identity stripping. You know, you take the manhood from the men, you know, you take the womanhood from the women, you know, and you tell boys they can be girls and girls they can be boys, and they're actually physically, you know, castrating young boys, and they're physically, you know, I guess operating on girls, you know, especially teenage girls. They're doing these horrible things in the name of gender affirming. You know, and so they're actually, this is like the Holocaust. This is like a medical Holocaust, every bit as bad as Nazi Germany. And yet they're all smiling and saying, oh, this is wonderful.
Yes,
and if you're against this, you're, you know, but the thing,
they're getting
you look
us
at
all
this
to walk towards it smiling. Yeah, we're walking into our own demise. And you know,
right.
And I'll repeat myself, you know, again, that I'm very trans supportive. And there are mm-hmm. real people born in the wrong body. That's my take. It's based on years. Mm-hmm. And that's real. It is more rare, though. It should be more rare in a healthy society. Yet again, very much included and very much supported, yet not promoted.
Well,
right?
It's not a civil right. You know, and here's what we did a couple of shows on this way back when. Pianki talked to me a lot about this. I remember very clearly that this was gender dysphoria. This is an issue of – this is a mental health issue. These are people that need to be talked to. Okay, individually, but it's not a civil right. You know, you don't put a man on a woman's swim team and call it normal. You know, it's like it's not. They're taking something that is an individual issue and making it an entire societal and national crisis, and that's not the way it should be. The, you know, if someone has an issue with their gender, I am sorry, but I'm not going to change my life. I'm not going to allow men in the women's rooms and women in the men's rooms simply because somebody has a political agenda, you know, over someone that has a personal issue that they should deal with. So you make the facilities available and the resources available to people to deal with issues of their gender. That's fine. I understand that completely. I don't want to discriminate against those people, but on the other hand, I don't want to promote them either. You know, in other words, there's no special rights. There's no special civil rights.
We're not promoting a lifestyle that the lifestyle is hard. It's difficult. The trans lifestyle is not easy, and the suicide rate is high. Why would we encourage children to go in a direction of such difficulty. I mean,
well,
obviously
to take
child,
away their identity.
You know,
if you can take the
I mean,
boyhood from the boy
sad.
And the girlhood from the girl, they have no idea. Well, see, here's my theory, though. I'm curious what you think of this. If you take away our natural identity, okay, so you take away a person's natural mm-hmm. identity of who they are, you know, girls that are born girls and boys that are born boys. If you take that away from them, you know, you open them to have it replaced with something. This British philosopher, Chichester.
Oh, definitely.
He said that.
And let's look at the prevalence of porn. Porn is everywhere.
Well, that's.
The sexual messages in the media and culture
we're gonna come back
are so
to that.
Through the roof. That, well, I mean, I'm certain that's what you're replacing it with, probably. You're replacing it with not family mm-hmm. values, not parental values, not healthy mm-hmm. sexual boundaries, but mm-hmm. lies, really lies that lead to poor health and poor relationships. And that's, again, a weaker society then, not a strong society.
I wonder how that works.
Well, you know, they don't just stop there. Because some school districts, they have to put litter boxes in the bathroom for those kids that identify as being cats.
What?
Yeah, I saw that.
Where did you get that from?
Yeah, that's true. That's happening.
That's a thing? Oh, my God. That's hysterical. Anyway, I just wanted this one
quote.
I'd rather
quote,
than
be cats, though.
Can I say?
Yeah, Josie, go ahead.
Hey, Greg. As a mom, I remember when my daughter asked me, she was like 5 years old, and she said, what is a gay? What is gay? And I'm like, I was like in shock. My daughter grew up in a Christian environment. I guess we should have talked to her about it, but she was a little too young. But I told her they're confused people. And they are, because my niece is confused. She's bisexual. She doesn't know if she wants a man. It's a lifestyle that they choose. And this is well organized by our government. And also, you know, Greg, I was thinking, because I was watching last night about this little boy. He's 10 years old, and he already knows that he wants his parts changed, and his parents are going along with the whole thing, and he doesn't even know how to wipe his butt. And the parents are listening to the little boy. They're going to make him into a girl. It's very, very sad. I had tears in my eyes because they're trying to change God's DNA, humanity. This is people that hate God, that they're trying to change God's creation. Bottom line, that's exactly what's going on, and this is all part of the Illuminati and Mason and our Democrats, radical communists, criminals running our country.
Dorothy?
That's it.
Yeah, no, that's my statement,
I think that what's happening now with the media push and all this PR is that now we're creating more divisiveness. So there, I believe strongly based on my research and my life experience that there are people born gay. I have preschool teacher friends, PhDs in child development, and we used to, kind of smile at the fact that you can look at a preschool classroom and you can kind of see the gay kids. You can see them early on. There is a natural homosexuality component of any culture. It's part of the spectrum of sexual identity. We have a natural mm-hmm. spectrum. But yes,
how much though? How much
as
is
well as
natural?
As well as there's a push. As well as there's a push for it.
Yeah, let's say so. Mm-hmm. So people that aren't influenced by school, by LGBT groups,
correct.
Things like that. How much of our population is born naturally homosexual? For example, it's like 1-2%, 5%. What's
so
the natural?
I don't know exactly, but I do know it has changed. It's shifted. I don't have the mm-hmm. percentages in front of me, but the estimation has shifted greatly, and there's many red flags or red arrows pointing to why.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the reasons why are a little controversial.
Well, hey, listen, this is the show for it. And,
and
we'll get back to your main topic. Yeah. Don't worry about it. But this is fascinating.
Yeah.
So,
well, so
be controversial.
Our
feel free.
And our water, endocrine disruptors and pharmaceuticals mm-hmm. in our water, plastics mm-hmm. in our water.
Vaccines.
We know there's many chemicals in our environment. No. Yeah, there you go. That's the one I don't like to say because, I mean, she can't be so crazy.
Oh, come on. We talk about it all the time.
But,
have you heard my Thursday
true.
Show?
No, the vaccine.
That's
all
we talk
about.
The
vaccine.
Years.
Since 1980s when they took the liability.
Hold up, Jackie.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Go ahead, Jackie. Then we'll get back to Dorothy.
Years
Jackie.
Ago, the American Psychiatric Society used to classify people with those thoughts as having mental illness.
Well,
yeah,
they
that's
also
not my experience.
How women's uteruses when we were too emotional. So let's be honest.
Yeah.
They also removed women's uteruses and clitorises because we were too emotional. So we
well, that's where the hysterectomy came from, because women were hysterical.
Yes.
People don't know that.
So we were wrong. Medical science is frequently wrong. I would even go so far as to say usually wrong.
Yeah. Well, you know, Pinky, it's an interesting point. You know, where a lot of these things come from. I totally forgot the point I was going to make. Let me make a previous one to what Josie was saying, that there was this British philosopher that said, if you know, Chichester, he says, if you take away the belief in God, the danger is not that people will believe in nothing. The danger is that they'll believe in anything. And this is where a lot of these problems come from. So if you take away somebody's identity and you take away God, now you've got an open identity to be able to be molded and changed. I mean, the Catholic Church has done that, you know, give us the kid, you know, by two and they're ours, you know, kind of thing. So the governments want to do that through their education system. So this is a big indoctrination. So this is why I asked you the question. And I spent, you know, I was in San Francisco for 30 years. You know, I was, you know, I lived in the Haight-Ashbury for you know, a decent chunk of it, to the Castro, which is the center of the gay community. Well, actually, the guys kind of congregate. Well, you know, when I have a lot of gay friends, I'm not kidding. You know, some of my best friends were gay. Okay, so that was fine with me. So my observation, you know, my read on this is that people literally are born gay. I absolutely agree with that. What I disagree with are those that try to change people into being gay because it suits their political agenda. Okay, you know, and I had a chat with a guy. We were both like early 20s working in a company before I left Boston, and it was a travel company, and there was a lot of gay guys in there, so it was a great opportunity to chat. And I said, well, when did you discover guys? You know, and we found out he discovered guys about the same time I discovered women. You know, like what, 12, 13, something like that. And so when you realize the developments are parallel, the only difference is the sex that they're attracted to. That's the big difference, okay? And you put aside the political agenda, you put aside everything else. It seemed like a very logical development, basically the same as I had, but I've always been attracted to women. Thank God. Makes my life easier. So women are gorgeous. But this guy, he was attracted to guys, you know, and for him it was natural. He was born that way. And I know a lot of people disagree with it. That's controversial. Because a lot of folks will say, well, that's not true. God created everybody, you know, heterosexual. I don't think so. You know, and that's okay to say.
And it's beautiful. You know, the spectrum is beautiful. I love the spectrum. It makes God created a complicated world. It's intricate. Mm. It is a rainbow, I mean, in essence. And I think we should take the rainbow back, I'm just saying. But it's a rainbow.
Well, take the rainbow back as a rainbow.
A variety. Yeah. Mm.
Well, try to imagine our world without gay people, all right? Try to imagine this country without gay people. You look at the contributions in art and music and entertainment and everything else that the gay, you know, gay folks have given to this country. This country would not be the same without gay people. It just wouldn't, okay?
Classical
Let's be clear about
music,
that.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. There's just
classical
a whole bunch
huge.
Of stuff. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, Tchaikovsky, I think, was gay, right, if I remember?
So my father was a concert pianist and conductor, so I just kind of grew up in that community. And, so beautiful artists, like passionate, soulful, yes. Let's
Liberace.
Keep them,
please. you know, Freddie Mercury.
Absolutely.
You know, the thing about
go ahead, Bianchi.
The thing about people with those persuasions, which is if they want to have it, it's okay. Mm-hmm. But if you're sitting down and meeting with somebody to engage in a relationship, all that about your present and your past should be brought out because you are exposing that person to something that they would not otherwise intend to be exposed to, whether emotionally or physically. Tell the person, hey, look, I look like I'm a female, but actually I'm a male. And if they want to continue the conversation, continue the conversation. But doing things under deceitful, doing things under a deceitful term like that can be dangerous and also sometimes fatal.
Yes. Agreed. I had a conversation this week with a friend who is trans, and she's on dating apps, and the discussion of when do you disclose, I mean, if this is fascinating, it's something I don't think about. When do you disclose, how early on? And it's immediate. The answer for her, a healthy trans woman, is immediately. You always
so
disclose
is she,
immediately.
But what was she born? Was she born a man?
She was born physically male.
So she's a guy, right? You know, all right. So this is the thing. We talk about a trans woman, but she's
XY.
Really not. She's really a trans man. He's a
that's
trans
your,
man who wants
opinion.
To be a woman.
Yeah.
See, this is the reversal. This is the part of it that I don't understand.
We agree to disagree on that one.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, I don't care. You know, I think it's a valid point to talk about because, and this goes to what Bianchi's talking about, full disclosure. If you say you're a trans man, you know, who wants to be a woman, you're biologically man, you're identifying who you are biologically and identifying what you want to become. Okay. Although you can't change your chromosomes. So there's only so much you can do with this. And so that makes sense. But to say somebody's a trans woman, you think that they're first of all a woman, you know, in transition. They're not. They're really a man in transition, just the same way as a trans man is really a woman who wants to be a man. And
yeah,
so
even,
I think we're
even
mislabeling.
Even if you're bisexual.
Yeah.
If you're bisexual, so, you need to reveal. If you're a male and mm-hmm. if you're a male and you're dating other men or having sexual contact with other men while you're still trying to maintain a relationship with a female, you need to tell that woman that and let them know both ways if you're a female doing the same thing. Why would you be so
yes,
deceitful?
Agreed.
How would you intentionally expose somebody to the harms and dangers from those type of activities?
Well, that's the point. The point is that the healthy trans absolutely are very upfront, open early on. It's very difficult. It's nobody wants.
But are there healthy
lifestyle.
Trans? Let's ask another question.
Oh my
are
God,
there healthy
God.
Trans?
Oh, so many. Most of them
okay.
are healthy. The ones we see in the media are that's a PR campaign. What's
well, but I'm, what I'm
in
saying in terms of no, wait
a
minute. But
a
when
campaign.
I say in terms of healthy,
mm-hmm.
I mean mentally healthy.
Yeah.
I mean know who they are. If you know, can you know who you are and be trans and be mentally healthy? I don't think so. To me, that's an issue
so
that has to be resolved.
I disagree, Greg.
Okay.
I did my post-master's thesis on this actually, the male to female transition and
uh-huh.
like the physical and emotional and psychological. Yes,
mm-hmm.
it requires support though. So the problem is our community isn't very supportive, and now it's going to be less so with this weird agenda of inverted reality making us all more divided on it. But it requires really several factors in place to be healthy, and one is community and family support.
Mm-hmm.
And so think about if you had none of that and who you truly were deep in your being.
Oh, I know it's like to have no
like
family support.
And, like,
I know exactly
you know,
what
so,
it's like. Have no family support, so yeah.
Yeah, or
not on this
support,
issue,
or
but
support,
yeah.
Or
mm-hmm.
yeah, cultural support, and in fact,
mm-hmm.
you had hate. I mean, I don't want to get into all that. I kind of want to talk about porn addiction because you.
I know.
Asked,
yeah, we're going to get back to that now. Let's,
yes,
let's
there
do
are
that.
Healthy trans. Yes.
Yeah, but see, you've got a master's, so we're going to spend a lot of time on this. It's fascinating to me. All right, so pornography. People say it's addictive and it's dangerous. I want to know why.
So it's a dangerous because. So all the studies have agreed, there's not a lot of disagreement here, that violent porn absolutely increases violence against women. And a lot of it is violent, whether it's subtly violent, like she says no, 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 and then he gets rough and passionate and she says yes. And in fact, that's a theme in 80s movies. If you go back and look at 80s movies, men and women relationships, this theme of her saying no, but then all along she really wanted it is prevalent, and it's prevalent in porn also. And
yeah.
more
she
so
she said no
in,
until he kissed
in,
her. Yeah, I've
yeah.
seen that in movies growing up
yeah.
all the time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And
okay.
so turn that up to the nth degree in pornography, mm-hmm. and it's a slippery slope also. So what turns you on today and gets you off, next day you need a little more, next day you need a little more. So now we have, you know, the kind of porn that's out there, I'm sure, it's beyond belief. Like it's anything goes, and the thicker the better, right? So this does change our tolerance and our acceptance and our motivation for those behaviors, especially when done regularly, and for adolescents, even more.
Well,
and,
is there a difference? Yeah. Let's look at a distinction here. Is the difference between, how can I put this bluntly, watching porn
yeah.
and using porn? You know, do people just watch because, oh, that's interesting. I haven't seen that before. You know, or people are like, oh, yeah, I need this from, you know, whatever
yeah.
release they have. You know, uh-huh. What's your question? I'm just curious.
So you mean without you watching it for curiosity without masturbating and getting into the storyline in your head and like getting turned on by it? Is that what you mean?
That's good. Yeah,
like,
I wasn't sure. I'm not real experienced in this area, folks. So I'm curious. But this is what occurs to me: do people just watch, and there are others that actually physically need it? And is that the line where the addiction comes in, or the danger?
Addiction, any addiction. We can talk about any addiction to whatever it is: online shopping, so constant craving for it. Constant
okay.
craving, so it like interrupts your thoughts during the day. Like, gosh, this is an interesting conversation, but I really wish I could go back to my computer and watch them. So intrusive thoughts. And then if you're having like a sad moment or a difficult moment, that's your
mm-hmm.
kind of go-to. Like, that's your comfort zone, right? Unable to stop doing it despite attempts to stop. So I've tried to stop and I can't stop. Another sign of addiction. Okay.
Is this a work problem? People are, you know, racing to their phones in the restrooms to watch porn. I mean, how bad is? Let me get to Bianca's question in a second here. But how bad is
okay.
it? Are people physically making opportunities to watch porn during the day? I mean, this just sounds like a horrendous. That is a problem.
I mean, I think it's a slippery slope, like any addiction.
Hold on, Bianca. I just want to answer this one, then I want to get to you. Believe me, I want to give you a chance. Dorothy?
Well, I think it's a slippery slope, just like any addiction. So it doesn't start off that way, but because of our dopamine firing centers in our brain, it becomes that way rather quickly for many people. It's the illusion of sexual choice. So a man will go without food and water and choose sexual choice over that. That's how strong our primitive urges are, right? And so if you offer this illusion of constant sexual variety, our brains don't really, you know, differentiate between reality and fiction when watching screens, right?
Yeah, but there's such a difference between watching and doing. There's like an incomprehensible difference. I explained this in a book I wrote on flight instruction, you know, talking about simulators versus, you know, flying in bad weather. It's the difference between watching a, you know, a love scene in a movie and actually doing it. There's no comparison. Let me get to Bianchi. I want to him to, and I got a question on dopamine.
Agree.
Yeah. Okay. Bianchi?
It's all mental, really, because you can take three women and strip them naked, and they're all not going to be attractive to a man. And then you may have someone who's physically unattractive.
Bianchi, it depends how they strip naked. And if they just drop their clothes, that's not attractive. If they, like, you know, do the whole seduction thing, that can be really attractive.
Well, no, it just depends. It's the physical attractiveness of people to other people. And some men, some women are just not attractive when it comes down to intimacy. Or how you doing, shake your hand, goodbye, yes. And, I mean, that's just the way it is.
Hmm.
And some people who may have some physical disformities who wouldn't be attracted, but they still have the desires. So this mode of satisfaction and release is perfectly fine if that's what they want to do.
That is a huge point I never even thought of. Yeah, people that are not maybe socially attractive, maybe awkward, might be not physically attractive, maybe through no fault of their own injuries, or they're just born not the most physically attractive person. What do you think? Maybe this is the best thing. I mean, I don't know.
Uh-oh.
Dorothy? It's a great question.
I mean, look, there's many ways to become more attractive, and I get it. They're hard. It's hard to go to the gym and work out. It's hard to have positive thoughts so you smile and you have a radiant energy. It's hard to maybe get so involved in an interesting intellectual topic that now you have a network and interesting things to say to people. So, you know, I'm sorry. That sounds like excuses. Maybe
no,
we had a more supportive society
like someone
for health
has,
in general.
Let's say someone has a thyroid problem and they're overweight, or someone, you know, come from a long line of really unattractive people breeding other unattractive people, and they're not attractive. You know, I don't know. I mean, there's a huge range.
Have you walked around Walmart like on a Friday night? I mean, I think there's someone for everyone. I'll be honest.
Okay, well, this is a fair point. I mean, but in other words, for people that it'd be interesting if we have like an unattractive class becomes a civil right. You know, these people have a right to pornography because they are, you know, in the unattractive class. And how dare you discriminate against unattractive
people? The cream rises to the top. The cream rises to the top, Greg. And you know what? We've seen that it decreases sexual intimacy between couples. So it ruins relationships. So it's important then actually breeding and creating children and a family. Then maybe this is a survival of the fittest.
Well, how can that be if you're in a normal, healthy relationship where you have a partner that you're attracted to constantly? You know, why would porn ever even enter into into somebody's life?
Well, you've probably come into the relationship already having a habit, or something has caused you to go on porn or start watching porn in the relationship, and now it's a downward spiral. So now you're communicating less, you're attracted less. You're looking to make connections with her less, and so the relationship keeps disintegrating, you know?
Would people rather watch porn if they're addicted than be with their partner?
That's what it shows. It does show that they're
unable
now to, and I'm not going to use the word perform. We don't like that word.
No, we
they're
don't.
They're not able to maintain erections in sexual activity. It leads to this. The studies have shown this. They're unable to be as excited with the sexual acts or the viewing of their partner's body. Imperfections, they start noticing them because porn, obviously, is airbrushed and bleached anuses and, you know, silicone. So it's completely unrealistic. And now we have girls in performative roles in the bedroom instead of pleasure roles. And this research on this is huge, what it's done to girls. Mm-hmm.
Well, tell me, what's it done?
Yeah. You have
performative sex.
Okay.
You have white males. You have stories in magazines where you have black women married to white males who use sex, racial epithets during sex. You have people with all kinds of mindsets. And then
hot.
You got the women that dress up.
I like it.
That sounds hot. Okay.
Yes,
feel free.
Oh,
her white husband be calling her.
Love it.
What does the Lord of Black Woman say? Give it to me, whitey.
I really want to hear this now.
Pianki, what kind of things are people saying? You know, like give it to me, whitey, or I mean, how do people say? This is this whole new world of exploring.
May be calling her the N word, and explicit for a dog. But the thing is, nowadays you got women can put on all sorts of false things, from hips to tits to. And eyelashes and hair, and the woman that you walked into the room with is not the same person that you finally meet in the bedroom. It's a whole different person.
No.
That's a scary thought.
True from the beginning of time, though. That's true for time eternal. I mean, women have stung their lips with bees, and they wear these crazy wigs that get wraps in them, and I mean, you know, they have the corsets that are like breaking their ribs. So I feel like this is kind of not new.
See, we guys don't do that. We just lie about our bank accounts and the job that we have. You know, so it's a totally different
That's
world.
That's right. We're either getting paid or getting paid.
Josie, come on in. Welcome back. Yeah, please do.
Can I say, and you know, when you hear the word pornography, immediately people think men. You know, men are addicted to pornography. But, you know, I was counseling a young girl, 16 years old, at the church, disciple her. She started watching pornography at 11 years old, and she was so addictive to pornography. So they start at a very early age, and like this lady was saying, they bring it with when they get married. I had a girl working for me years ago, and she has to put chain and lock the computer. I don't know, 8-9 years ago when she was working for me, because her husband was so addicted to pornography, and that was the only way to help him. And it's a shame. But this is a big money machine industry, all this pornography. And
so
school starts at home, and parents should start teaching their kids at an early age that it's bad, because it's sick. It's a sick situation, you know. God created sex for pleasure and to create humans in the world, but the stuff that you see right now is disgusting. It's just bad, and there's a lot of children so addicted already.
So I love that you mentioned 11 years old. So the average age child is shown porn is 11 years old, and some studies are saying 9. In certain parts of the country, it's 9. So my advice, if no one's asking me, I'm going to give it anyway, is start talking to your kids by 9 years old gently about pornography so they know what to do when someone shows it to them, and they have a strong value system and a strong statement they can say to that person.
I didn't know what sex was at 11 years old.
It's not
illegal. Like a whole new world.
It's not illegal if they're animated characters, like 3D porn. I mean, if it's real humans, quite natural, it's illegal. But the courts have said animated characters are not human. You can have animated kids having sex with animated grown adults. It's not illegal.
Oh, that's interesting. Dorothy?
Isn't that crazy? Well, I mean, it's just little loopholes so that perverted people who are really trying to destroy our children can get in there. So parental conversation is hugely important, right? Parents got to be the first. That's our job. Protect our children.
It's sad that you have to protect your kids about a porn environment, you know, and everything from drag story time, drag queen story time, and some of the other things going on in schools. And there's another reason not to send your kid to government schools, because they have all these ridiculous programs. You know, there's and you're fighting a battle, because you've got good sex ed versus, you know, pornography, bad, you know, ed. You know, and it's like this battle. So you almost have to inoculate kids against what you know they're going to see at some point. But you shouldn't have to do that, because, like I say, I grew up in a world, and you know, all of us, Pianki and Josie, you know, where this wasn't constantly thrown in our face at such a young age. So that's got to be one of the biggest problems is the kids are so young and impressionable. You know, at 11 years old, I was like, you know, bike riding, playing tennis, having fun, you know, that just wasn't, you know, porn. Who knew? Oh yeah. We see the Playboy magazines with the cover, with like the little wooden things in front of them. And we sort of like wonder because everybody's curious, but it's one thing to wonder. It's another thing to have it thrown in your face is blatantly obvious.
Well, kids
happens
are
today.
Really curious. That's a great point. Kids are very curious about sexuality and they see it everywhere. They hear it everywhere. I can't remember the exact stats, but I think they did a wonderful study about primetime viewing and they found hundreds of examples of sexual content in the hours of primetime on the major channels. And so they're going to see it, hear it, feel it. They see it on billboards and they're curious. And if we don't talk openly and they don't see healthy, intimate relationships exampled in front of them, and then they will go to the internet and go to friends to look. And we got to get there first, you know?
Yeah. How many kids have, you know, healthy, intimate relationships that they see with the divorce rate?
Right.
How many kids have relationships that they see that are healthy?
Yeah.
And say the porn just don't stop there with humans. Then you got the bestiality. In California, the marry your pet was being allowed. So you have bestiality. Humans have sex with animals and all the other things. And if you see a dog running around in your neighborhood with socks taped to its front paws, you should be suspected of what the heck's going on here.
The things you know, scary.
Yeah.
This whole world that, you know, and what's wrong with normal sex? That's fun enough. What's
well,
all this crazy stuff? Or is it not fun enough?
I think it's pornography. I really do. I think it's pornography. It makes people want more and more, different, more and more. They're never satisfied. And then you lead to the dogs in California. There we go.
So what is it about never being satisfied? Where did that get lost? I mean, the human body is designed to be satisfied, you know, with your partner.
Correct.
How did it get to the point where people all of a sudden weren't?
Okay, so the example for me I think about is food. If you're on a clean diet with juices and vegetables and simple foods, and then you begin to introduce salt and high fructose corn syrup, now you've changed the brain, you've changed the body's expectations, you've triggered these pleasure centers. And now when you go back to your regular, you know, whatever it is, your regular glass of water, it doesn't taste as good, your regular salad, now you want the flaming hot Cheetos. So I think it's the same with sexual addiction and wanting more and more and not having simplicity be enough. So now we've moved towards a place where we are really unhealthy, really sick, really distorted, and lonely. And the same with kind of food and food addiction. We've moved to a place now where our liver's toxified, our bodies are fat and heavy, we're tired, we're moody, yet we keep doing it. So addictions have the same patterns and the same kind of consequences, no matter what they are. And I think the steps to remove the addiction is very similar also.
You raise a fascinating question. If you put them,
I don't think it's food.
Go ahead, Bianca, you first, and then
I don't think it's the food because you have in the religious text that's forbid having sex with the saints, men having sex with men like women, and women having sex with women like men, and also lying with animals. So that was way before processed foods. Apparently, it's something that human beings have been engaged in since the advent of human beings, and now you have what you have. Hell, they even have androids. You can buy an android, female android, that have all the facial expressions and everything else that a real woman would have.
Ooh,
and
the Stepford
wife.
You
get done with it, you just hang her up in the closet.
You can have a Stepford wife, for those that saw the movie.
Yes, the robot.
Yeah, they got male androids, too, for the females.
See, that to me is like the ultimate, I don't know, you know, that's like the ultimate control, ultimate selfish. You want someone that you can command, a robot, and you're willing to substitute a robot that does what you want for an individual that you have to actually negotiate with and engage with and interact with. That's just a failure of humanity. You know, that you're willing to give up on people for your robot. That's a whole psychology into itself. Are these porn robots too?
I knew somebody who stayed inside their house and they were so heavy with such food addiction that they never came out of their house. I mean, it's real. Our brains get deceived with addictive things, and we change our lives. And it's, you know, we recreate our entire life. Look at fear addiction. Fear can be addictive also. Look what happened during COVID. People didn't come out of their homes.
Yeah.
People are still wearing masks. I mean, applied psychology dictates if you put a message into someone's head for a certain number of weeks, it's very hard to change it.
What's a habit?
Yeah,
3 weeks? 3 weeks it takes to develop a habit, or 3 weeks to break one of consistency? That's what I heard. Well,
I got a question. 3 weeks and 2 months for a fear message. Mm-hmm.
2 months.
I got a
question for this
young lady.
Uh-huh. That's Dorothy, a regular reporter for she's on every week.
Okay, Dorothy.
Yeah.
Hello.
Dorothy, where's Toto?
Oh, I don't know.
Where's Toto, Dorothy? Anyway, I got a question. Why do you think back in the old days, and I'm almost 64 years old, and why do you think way back on our times, and I don't know how old you are, but me, they were hiding people that were homosexual in my neighborhood. They marry a woman, have kids, and behind closed door, he was having sex with men. And they knew it was a no-no. They were ashamed. So why do you think if it's so wrong, you know, they were keeping it a secret? It was a shame to have a gay person in the family.
Yeah.
Why do you think they were hiding it back then?
I think because our culture didn't accept it. Our culture was not accepting. So you hide it to not be completely ostracized from your family and your support group.
Mm-hmm.
And
nowadays, like you guys were talking about it, they want to shove it in your face, like it or not. And even some transgender, and my niece, that she's a lesbian, bisexual, I think she's confused. She don't know what she wants. We talk on the phone about it all the time, and she thought that I hated her because I'm a Christian missionary woman, and I said, I don't hate you. I love you. You're my niece. I just disagree in your lifestyle because you're choosing that type of lifestyle. But she's even against what they're doing to little kids herself.
Yeah.
There's a lot of gays and transgender coming forward against this whole thing. They're shoving it in children's face in the schools, and it's just out of control. Out of control.
They are. They're coming forward because we all agree. Healthy people are in agreement. I talk to so many people throughout the day of different backgrounds and beliefs, and I'm telling you, we agree more than we disagree. So this PR campaign, this multi-billion-dollar PR campaign that the media is doing in the education system is not the people. This is not the citizen's voice. Mm-mm. Yeah.
Mm.
I love those conversations, like your niece is telling you. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's fascinating to get this group together between Bianchi, Josie, Dorothy, and me. You know, we all had different backgrounds, different experiences, different views on all kinds of different issues. It's fascinating to bring this group together, so I hope we can keep doing this. I got a question, though, on addiction again. I'm talking about food addiction, sex addiction, addictions in general. One, where in the brain does that go? Is that where dopamine comes in? And the second question is, you were talking about nutrition earlier. If you're a healthy body, if you've got good nutrition, you don't have the artificial chemical stimulant, sugar, salt, hormones, pheromones, you know, high fructose corn syrup and everything else like that, does a healthier body make you less prone to addiction? So in other words, someone that exercises and has a decent relationship is probably not going to, you know, they may watch porn out of curiosity or humor, but they're not going to be dependent on it for whatever because you're basically a healthy person.
Right.
Question.
So
yeah, what do you think?
That says a lot of questions in a question. That's great. But physical health certainly can, because it improves mood and it decreases the lability of mood and fatigue and things like that, yes, you have more willpower. It also increases, so if it increases energy, increases mood, now you're more likely to find pleasure in little things in life, in conversations, in petting your dog. There's a lot of activities that stimulate our dopamine response. But they might take a tiny bit more effort than sitting at a computer or doing online shopping. Again, also the effects of trauma. So you're much more likely to develop addictive behaviors if you have unhealed trauma, which many, many of us do. It is completely epidemic in our society. So that's another thing too, healing the trauma. And the movement therapy I do, as you know, is a trauma healing therapy. There's other avenues to heal trauma, lots of them. But I think that's key also, because then those people tend to fall into addictive behaviors much easier and have a harder time getting out of them. Yes,
what's dopamine?
To a healthy body, though. Yes.
Yeah, what's dopamine? How does that,
well,
what exactly is that? How does that work?
It's our feel-good chemical.
Okay. Do we have it naturally?
Yeah.
Do we develop it? Is it a brain area of the brain that it comes out of? Is it a hormone? What is it?
There's a complicated pathway for dopamine release, but it is, and there's a lot of different parts of the brain and chemical system, endocrine system that sort of have a pathway and feed off of each other. But you can actually retrain your brain to release more serotonin, more dopamine. You can actually control that with activities you choose.
Definitely
supplements. There are healthy supplements to increase your dopamine also. The last 2 points on porn addiction, how do you know? Because you did ask me that. I just wanted to make sure
I'll
do it in slow.
And we can run over the next hour
a little bit too.
So feel free. This is
fun. I'm going to post on my Facebook a couple of articles that if the people who are listening are interested in, like, maybe I have that, maybe that's screwing up my life, how do I get out of that? I'm going to post a couple of things that I thought were very well done and very helpful and concise and easy on do you have it and how do you get out of it and the benefits. So, but the last two on porn addiction, one of the most significant is the decrease in sexual intimacy with your partner. So over time, so the porn is replacing the physical intimacy. That's huge. And then sneaky behavior. So any addiction, when you're feeling like you have to hide it, and hide it from your husband, online shopping, hide it from
like
your
cheating.
Spouse, the porn.
hide your
cookies up there in the cupboard, you know, lock them up so no one sees you eating them. Yeah, all the hiding stuff is a sign of addiction. And that's it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is fascinating. We do have a life and health coaching page, and I highly recommend, suggest, and I'd love to have you contribute to that, because this would be a whole different avenue that would go into life and health coaching, because this all relates. And we have the wellness women moderate it, and our folks from Wednesday, Lindsay, Chansey, and Paige are fabulous. And so we have our life coach, Jean, who used to produce the show months and months ago. So we're taking her page, we're expanding it, but you should be there too, because this is fascinating.
Mentioned.
Yeah, post anything you want there. I mean, feel free. And so meet the gang, and you're all going to get along fabulously. This is going to be great. You mentioned serotonin, and I remember just hearing recently that low levels of serotonin do not cause depression. So all these drugs that we're trying to, serotonin reuptake inhibitors. I love to work that in at least once a show, serotonin reuptake inhibitors. That now serotonin and dopamine, do they have a connection? And is this a way to fight addictions? And is depression, does that lead to porn addiction, for example, or other addictions? I do that.
I'm
ADHD. Okay, get over it. This is how I ask questions. I'm sorry.
So serotonin carries messages between the nerve cells and throughout your body, and kind of telling your body how to work it in general.
Oh.
So happiness, sexual behavior, hunger. So not enough serotonin, obviously, depression, anxiety. And what's really interesting, I love this because, I don't know if I do detox. I detox people. I do a full body detox. It just resets the body. So if you have any symptoms, you know what you're looking at. I'm not going to get into that right now, but I love
that.
That'd
be fascinating.
But it all goes together. It all goes together as we talked about with addiction. And, so serotonin is mostly found in the gut. So even more important to have, your wellness coaches and to have this healthy gut and healthy intake of foods that are clean and non-GMO. But now I'm getting off track entirely, aren't I?
I don't care.
So serotonin.
Well,
you
think I'm ever on track? I told
you.
ADHD. We don't have a track. We're always off track. This is what makes this show so much fun. Go ahead.
Yeah, and serotonin works in conjunction with dopamine for sexual desire. So super important, right? And requiring more and more. When you watch porn, you're now literally desensitizing and requiring more and more release of those chemicals in order to get it up in the bed with your lover. Mm-hmm.
Okay, wait a minute. So there's another one, too. Isn't oxytocin play a part in this, too? Isn't that the love drug, the hormone that after you have sex, you feel really great? How does that – so we're getting a little biochemical here, but let's complete the picture. So serotonin, dopamine, and oxytocin, how do they all – is there a sequence to them, and how does that all work? I know, like I said, we're getting biochemical, but I think this will help people understand, because then, of course, we're going to find how do you boost the levels of each naturally so that you're not porn addicted. That's where I want to go with this. So tell me the story.
Yeah. So oxytocin. So that helps us connect, make like it's like a sort of a social reward, meaning you have oxytocin release, you're more bonded to someone else or to the experience you have, the experiences you have, like a love hormone. It's also a neurotransmitter. And especially with childbirth is what I think of oxytocin. Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
So how you bond to your baby. Yeah. So
which
also determining like,
which one causes jealousy? If you're walking down the street with your wife and another woman coming from the other direction with a big butt causing you to turn your head and she wants to smack you with her purse, what chemical causes that?
I don't know.
I love it. Well, see, this is a fascinating topic. This is a topic in itself because, guys, we look at women. I mean, you know, I used to joke around with friends of mine, you know, back in my 20s, you know, going doing the bar hopping concert thing like that. And I said, I don't have to sleep with every woman in the bar. I just like to think I can. And a friend of mine recently said, how could you say that? Well, because it's funny. You know, do I intend to sleep with every woman in the bar? No. Would I like to think I could? Sure. You know, so why do guys look at other women? Because guys look at other women.
And
we
what,
just do it.
Chemical,
doesn't mean we're taking them home. Doesn't mean we're going to – yeah, go ahead, Pianki. You know where I'm going with this.
What chemicals causes women to dress like that? So subjective. You know, you got black women in this country. They put so much emphasis in their big butt.
Yeah, they
what
tell you not to look at
here?
It. Women dress seductively
well,
and say don't look. You know,
fertility. Talk about the big butt signifies fertility. The big butt and the small waist. The small waist to big butt ratio, just to use medical terminology, signifies a fertility, like how fertile the woman is, how able to carry babies, healthy, all the way to a healthy.
So why do black women do it, not white women? Why don't Asian women do it? Well, I can't think of Asian women with big butts anyway, because they're you know, they're Asian women. Why do black women? You know why? Okay, just curious.
Isn't it?
Josie?
And nowadays, all the women are having fake butts. I'm having a hard time selling pants in my store because they're size 12 waist and size 3XL in the butt.
Oh,
and I'm having a hard time. Really, really, I'm having a hard time selling pants.
Josie has a uniform shop. Yeah, so it's fascinating.
I love that topic. Yeah, you had the clothing has to change, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
If guys are more attracted to visual, you know, if a big
it's
butt
like
signifies
porn,
fertility,
right?
Wouldn't
porn.
All? Well, but here's the question though: wouldn't if big butts certify fertility, and black women, you know, want to have more big butts than white women, Asian women, Hispanic women, wouldn't all men of all races be attracted more to black women? Dorothy?
Well, when you go by aerobic classes, you see a lot of white women doing exercises that make their butts bigger.
Okay, now that we're on the subject, everything goes here. Dorothy?
And to be truthful, which is a lot of it is working. I'm a male, and I can tell you, yes, it is working.
Do you appreciate a fine butt, Pianki? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm not going to go into those extremes, but...
oh, my God.
Sometimes when I come in the house, I have to massage my neck from turning my head so much.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, guys like
there's nothing wrong with that. That's a good thing. We should all have nice things to look at when we go through our day. I think it's lovely.
Well, if you're with a,
and
if you're with a guy.
Bring on the big butt.
That's
bring
why
on
men,
the big butt.
Greg.
Uh-huh.
Greg, that's why men look at other women because they might have a big fat woman next to their side. So they're attracted to somebody that looks good. And you know, women should look good for their husbands all the time. You know, you have to please your men because men are more visual. They want to look the other way. But men think the grass is greener on the other side until the woman takes the wig and the eyelashes and the fake butt and all that, you know.
Takes their butt off.
I had it better at home.
Well,
at least my wife is fat and she can get skinny, but you ugliness cannot go away.
You actually raised a really good point.
It's important to keep your appearance up in a relationship. I would agree with that. When you said it's important to look nice for your husband, I think it's men are visual, and we can wish they weren't, whatever. It makes you angry feminists.
Why would you wish we weren't?
They are. And if you – well, there's – I mean, this is controversial. Like, why do I have to do this? He should just love me for me. You know what? Men are visual, so take it or leave it.
Well, women want security. Why should I – You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many, well, but, you know, I'm not what, I've been called unstable, you know, which means I'm not, you know, on a career path, you know, with a steady income and a house and the right car and things like that. So why do women want mm-hmm. the security thing? Why do I have to live up to some woman's image of what a secure, stable man is just to be attractive to them?
This is interesting. I love Pat Allen, and she's kind of antiquated her ideas sometimes, people say, but I think she's fantastic. And she always says, do you want to get laid or do you want to get paid? And what that means essentially uh-huh. is that the masculine energy in the relationship is looking to get laid, and the feminine uh-huh. is looking to get paid. And I know that sounds crazy. This might be controversial,
no, it doesn't sound
but
crazy
in
at
essence,
all. Yeah.
She's a transactional relational psychologist, and that's where she's coming from this perspective, which I think is kind of true.
I think it's accurate. And this is one of the things, well, here's the difference between American women and European women. One of the things I discovered traveling around Europe for 3 months in my early 20s after college, boy, was that an experience. European women don't see sex relationships, engagements. You know, I met a bunch of women from a bunch of different countries, and I remember one school teacher took me around all Paris for a day. She had a boyfriend, but, you know, we didn't do anything. That would seem more likely than the United States. But it seems like American women and American culture is much more of a transactional business arrangement. Sex is a commodity far more than is in Europe, who looks at life as much more luxurious. They take bigger vacations. We talked about in the first hour with Shelby, our cruise and travel person, that Europeans look at life very differently. Not so much a quid pro quo. It's not dinner for sex. It's you know, it's who you are. It's much more of a relationship oriented society for everything, as opposed to the United States, which is much more of a business oriented. You know, I'm going to make you a deal. I'm going to give you this. You're going to give me that. It's a totally different way of looking at things. We should talk about that sometime too. Have you studied that at all?
Yes, we should. I love that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Great topic.
Do you have any views now before we play other stuff and do other things? we burned through this hour pretty quickly. Yeah.
I know. And I was so submerged in oxytocin, dopamine from our conversation right now. I'm just so like content sitting here.
Yeah. Well, this is more than just an hour of conversation. This is an experience. And this is why I love having mm-hmm. you on the show, that we do more, you know, it's interesting talking about the things we were talking, and there's a lot of times they're personal subjects, and I don't want to ask personal questions. I probably goof and do sometimes, and I'm, you know, and that's not the point of this. I mean, we want to keep this, you know, general, but it does get intensely personal with the feelings and things that we talk about. But I think it's good to do this. I think what we're doing is definitely a fascinating journey for me to sort of think about things that I never would have thought of. And this is why I like having Pianchi and Josie, you know, in this particular hour as
well. I do
well.
Too.
They're fun. I like them. And some people be unfairly punished. Look what happened to Tiny Tim.
Okay, explain. For those that don't know who Tiny Tim is.
Tiny Tim was in a porn movie house, and he was masturbating, and he got caught.
No,
and,
Pee-wee
of course,
Herman.
Being who he was.
Tiny Tim had a high squeaky voice, though.
I thought you did.
Yeah. Well, what's that?
I said, you know more than I thought you did.
Well,
Pee-wee Herman, you're absolutely right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't watch Pee-wee Herman movies because I think he's a terrible actor. I don't think he's funny. But I did hear that story. You know, in fact, I remember he actually got there was some documentary about how he became accepted by the public and went out on stage again in, like 10 years after the event. And it's like, you know, the resurrection of Pee-wee Herman kind of thing, you know. But it's just, yeah, people have been caught doing some pretty horrendous stuff. And it's like, you know, the people that – who was that minister that, you know, I have sinned against you. You know, he was one of these Christian ministers.
Swaggered.
Yeah, and he one of his biggest topics was porn. You can't have porn. You can't do porn, talk about porn, see porn. Porn is a horrible, evil thing. And, of course, then he was, like, watching porn all the time.
Kind of right.
And then, you know, a little hypocrite.
Well, they say you teach best what you most need to learn.
Ooh.
Have you heard this?
Okay.
Yeah. So.
But, you know, I think that you should have those apparatuses, those dolls for prisoners in prisons. And that will stop a lot of rape that goes on between males in these male prisons also. But what about now? You got these trends.
Oh, well, hold on. That's a good topic. That's a good. So,
I like that.
What a great solution.
Solution-oriented conversation. I love it.
Yeah, but here's the question though, because you don't want to reward prisoners. It's supposed to be punishment. On the other hand, you know, rape in prison is an assault. You know, it's a rape. It's a horrible thing. So the question is, if it cuts down on rapes, you know, would it be a prison reform measure to bring in dolls, robots, things like that? You know, still, you're still going to be in this jail cell
when they hand out your jump shoes, your jumpsuit, your shoes and socks, they give you your doll, too.
Yeah. You got to inflate it yourself, though, right? I mean, we've got to be fair about this. We can't
awkward.
Make it too easy.
So awkward.
Okay. What? What's awkward?
Do you want – that just would – I don't know. That's funny. I think – I personally, I don't know. I've never been a prisoner, but I think I would feel very awkward. But
do you want to hear something funny?
We just did hear something funny. Are you kidding? Dorothy doesn't know what it is. We've actually stumped a sex therapist. We've stumped Dorothy.
My store is like an information center, and I'm not going to say Gaza, but I hear all the stuff from all the hospitals and prison, and it's just funny that you mentioned prison, or somebody did, because I had a nurse that came in 2 days ago. No, she came on Friday. And she was telling me a story about one of the prisoners. I think it was in Milton prison. That he was under heavy meth, you know, some drug. And they put him in a cell by himself. And he shoved his private part into the drain, little hole right there, and shoved it in through all the little holes that he was stuck. And they have to call the rescue. And it was black and blue. They don't know if they probably have to amputate it.
When did we get to
yesterday,
the funny part?
I had a nurse.
He was on something.
I had a nurse yesterday, and she said, "I work at the prison, blah blah blah." I said, "Don't tell me you're in the same prison where that guy stuck his thing in the hole and all that in the drain." And she started laughing out of control. She said, "Yes, I was there. I seen it." And she said, "It was black and blue, and he's probably gonna lose it." But this drug, the mess that people are doing, it's just out of control. Out of control.
So
it's not a funny story.
It's
very sad, actually. Yeah.
If you ever want to have a great dinner conversation, invite an ER nurse and get them on the topic of objects found in people's rectums, right? In the ER. Yeah.
I want to warn you folks, having breakfast, this is not the conversation for you. We're going to give a little warning next time we start our conversation here with the sex report. This is fascinating. Is there a drug connection to porn? Just to get back to our topic here, are people who are on meth or various other, or cocaine or marijuana, is there a connection?
Behavior. Drugs are addictive behavior. So the addictive behaviors do tend to go hand in hand. Most people with addictive behavior have more than one. So to answer your question, yes.
Is it the same part of the brain?
Is it a lack of
dopamine, or is it a chemical thing?
Porn is an illicit behavior because boys have wet dreams. And they don't have no porn. They just have wet dreams because of what they dream while they're asleep.
That's a hormonal biological thing. I don't think, you know, what do they say about, what's the science say about that?
Sorry, about the wet dreams?
Well, yeah. You know, you got guys that, you got boys that have never
And women have them, women have them too.
No, that's interesting.
Well, I think it speaks to the fact that our sexual desires are all in our brains, chemicals. I mean, we are in the waking world, and now we have our senses that are front and center in our conscious brain have taken over. But when you go to sleep, you get to let go of all of that, and the real stuff comes out, right? Most of the work, most of the real activity is not in our conscious brain, right? It's in our subconscious, which is why being aware of trauma and addiction and our motivations, a lot of people don't know why they do what they do, right? They really have no clue. They're just going through life robotically. But when you start to understand trauma, addiction, motivation, why are we drawn to porn? Why are we drawn to, certain sexual behaviors that are not healthy for us? And then kind of realize it's all in the subconscious. Mm-hmm. That's a step to recovery. And I'm going to post something on your site for an addiction and the steps to get out of it if you're in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the wet dreams just speaks to the fact of everything that's happening below the surface, right? So much in our subconscious. And that, and also, and I don't want to keep going on and on, but tantric sex, the practice of that, that sort of is a nice segue between the subconscious and the conscious mind and sexuality, which is very successful in increasing intimacy between partners, increasing orgasmic potential and all this.
Oh, I got to try this.
What
is it?
I mean, I'm telling you, it is fantastic.
Okay.
Well, it's too much for right now, and my time is over. I have another
too bad. This is just getting interesting.
I know, but I love Tantra, so I'd love to discuss it another time because I feel like it's the sort of golden key, the secret little golden key to the next level of amazingness and intimacy. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to have to change the name of this report. We spend a lot of time on this one and or the name of the show today. I guess we'll get to my topic in a bit, but this has been much more fun. So websites, information, contact, you know, public stuff you want to share with people in Lithuania and Azerbaijan and Sri Lanka and whoever else is listening?
For me, I just want to share that my Facebook is where I post most of my things and where I connect with people. I have a very large following there, and it's easy for me. And also, I am going to use your venue you shared with me today, your health and wellness,
mm-hmm.
and post also not only on my Facebook about the things we discussed and articles that are helpful, but also on your site today.
Life and
I'm developing
coaching.
A website. It's shifted. My website is under construction because I've shifted it a little bit.
Okay.
So we'll have to wait on that one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have to hear about tantric sex next week. Never got to ask about romance novels, too, and why that's different than porn. But we'll do that another week, too. There's so much
erotica
to talk about.
Yes, feminist erotica and mainstream porn is very different. And feminist erotica, I believe, can have a supportive effect on intimacy. And it's a completely different category. But that's a great subtopic also.
Is there masculine erotica now that we've brought up feminine? You know me. I have to ask.
Stumped her again. The masculine mind is typically drawn to traditional porn, and the feminine is usually, and this is supported by research, is drawn to the feminine erotica. It's more geared towards the feminine, mutuality, consensualism, a storyline, character development, things like this.
The storyline in porn is rather limited. You're right in that respect. Yeah, exactly. But I bet you.
Well, you know, teachers have used magazine stories in order to help improve students' reading ability too. Believe it or not.
So we should have the kids reading porn stories. What was that magazine? Was it Penthouse? I remember in college we all read Penthouse.
Started.
You know, the real this really happened. Of course, we knew it didn't happen, but we liked reading it anyway. There I was. This incredible thing happened. You know, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, there's a huge.
I must say my goodbye for today. I have someone waiting for me.
Okay.
I love running over with you, though. I'll allow more time next time.
Well, thank you. Unless we have a guest. I mean, there are times when I'm not going to be able to do it, but today we did, so we just went for it. Well, let's continue, and then we can talk about masculine erotica and the untapped market and the huge, you know, potential opportunity that presents at this particular moment. We'll talk about that.
I'm sure you have lots of ideas on that.
I do now. I never heard of it until I thought about it like, you know, a minute ago. But yeah, this is definitely something I have to explore now. You know me, I got to think of every topic through. Thank you, Dorothy.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about feminine erotica and tantra. I think those are great future topics.
Okay, put them on the list. And I want to know how your your Facebook followers are following our report here. I'd be curious what the reactions are. So feel free to bring those, maybe they're on the show or a message or something like that. But get out of here. You're going to keep talking. But I'd love to talk to you.
Lovely to meet the other guests. And I really enjoyed the added complimentary comments. I find them very useful and interesting. So thank you for having this bigger group today. It was lovely.
Well, this is actually our standard group. Pianki and Josie are regulars, so you never know when they're going to drop in. Other people will drop in, but those are our two main callers. So feel free. So expect that it's not going to be just us, although
surprise.
It will be sometimes. Yeah. Hey,
perfect.
Take care. We'll
perfect.
Do it soon, next week.
Have a blessed day. You too. Have a blessed day. Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right. Got to play you a little.
We did the big old origin.
We are. Well, I mean, Pianki and Josie, did you ever think we'd have a sex and sensuality report on Action Radio?
Never.
Well,
but isn't it great?
It's needed. it's helpful. It's good. People should be more openly what's on their minds. I mean, that's what's wrong today.
It's part of life, you know?
Yeah.
It's part of life, and we're facing a lot of thorns and tribulations right now with this agenda, you know? So we have to stand and say, no, you're not going to teach my children this garbage. Keep it in your house. Do it to yourself or whatever you want to injure yourself with, you know, confusion.
Yeah.
It's up to you, but don't shove it and force it in my face. And don't make me pay out of my taxes to send your sex change either. I disagree 100% with that garbage.
Yeah, well, and this is what we talked about, too. There's a big difference between the agenda, the political agenda, and people's various issues, both mental and physical, and both. You know, so if you have an issue that needs help, you know, there should be a way for you to get help. You know, there, all the differences we have, we should be able to account for and talk about. But if you're trying to force who you are into somebody else, that's a problem. You know, if you want to identify as a different sex and you want kids 5 years old to do it, we've got a problem. If you want to identify as differently, that's fine. But it's not a civil right. You can't affect my life. You have to deal with it yourself, and you certainly can't go after kids.
Exactly.
I think most of us draw that line. That if you want to do it, it's like most of us. We understand that there are gay people, but I don't want to know. You know, and they do different stuff,
yeah.
And I don't want to know. It's like, go ahead, just go. I don't care. But don't put it. I don't want to see the pictures. You know, I don't want the descriptions. I don't need to know. Just go ahead and whatever you want to do is fine. But don't, you know, as long as they're consenting adults, but the rest of us, you know, that don't want to hear it, we don't want to hear it. We just don't. And that goes for heterosexual couples, too. We don't have to know all your details either. All right, let me play some stuff where we're never going to get our break.
All right.
Be back in a few minutes. And Josie, if you have to head off to where you should give yourself a shameless
plug. Yeah, in a few minutes. So I'll be listening.
We don't hear enough about
you. God bless.
God bless you, too. You, we don't hear about your store enough. So if you want to plug that, feel free.
Be careful, Josie.
Yeah, that's fine. God bless.
Bye-bye. All right. God bless, Jesse. All right. So we'll have a little bit of time to chat when we get back here, about half an hour or so, probably a little bit more than that. Anyway, got to play some stuff, and we'll be back, and then I'll tell you about our new affiliates. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. There is no separation of church and state in the Constitution. Therefore, the Supreme Court can't imagine that it really is there, or should be there, so they can't create the rule out of thin air and then enforce it as if it actually did exist. The biggest problem with the controversy between Thomas Jefferson, then president, and the Danbury, Connecticut Baptists, a religious minority, is that everyone focuses on the answer by Thomas Jefferson, saying there is a wall of separation between church and state. But they never consider the request made by the Danbury Baptists that Jefferson sought to answer, and therefore where the wall of separation actually is. If you only have the answer, then you can make the question anything you want, including making the question fit the answer to advance an agenda or denying that there even is a question. The question now is whether the government is free from any of the moral constraints or persuasiveness of religion, such that religion and government are walled off in isolation from each other, so that government can contemplate and implement any power for themselves without any organized religious participation, debate, opinion, objection, or protest. That is a complete bastardization of the exchange between Jefferson and the Baptists, and it has been used to advance a bogus set of laws and court opinions. The background for this controversy comes from the article mentioned below, which says, "The First Amendment was meant as a limit on the National Congress only. Madison wanted limits on the states too, but they were rejected. State limitations on religious liberty and establishment persisted after the First Amendment was adopted. Religious tests for office remained in place in most states, and Connecticut, 1818, and Massachusetts, in 1833, did not disestablish their official state churches until decades later. the Supreme Court reinforced the idea that the Bill of Rights did not apply to the states, but rather only to the national government in Barron v. Baltimore in 1833. Back to me. Where this becomes especially critical is when the states, not the state, as in government in general, but the individual states, establish their own religion and churches because they were not subject yet to the First Amendment. It is in that context that Jefferson is responding to the Danbury Baptists. The key part of the Danbury Baptist letter to Jefferson is this clause. What religious privileges we enjoy as a minor part of the state, we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights. And these favors we receive at the expense of such degrading acknowledgments as are inconsistent with the rights of free men. The Danbury Baptists, being a religious minority in a larger group of Congregationalists, which was the state religion of Connecticut, were being discriminated against for not being part of the state religion. And because the First Amendment only referred to Congress making no law regarding the establishment of a government religion, but left the states free to do so, we had religious freedom at the federal level, but privilege and discrimination at the state level. That is why the Danbury Baptists wrote Jefferson. Now Jefferson's response makes sense. He says to the Baptists, "Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." Put in modern English, the individual relationship between man and God is direct, and the wall of separation is so that the government never crosses that wall between individuals, their churches, and God, with state religions, state churches, religious laws and tests, religious qualifications for office, etc., etc. However, there is nothing in law or the Constitution preventing churches, religions, and religious individuals like pastors, priests, ministers, etc., and just regular folks too, from exercising moral persuasion, evaluation, and criticism over government, because the free exercise of religion also includes the redress of government for grievances. The wall of separation of which Jefferson spoke only works one way. To understand Jefferson and the Baptists, it's not the wall of separation between church and state, it's the wall of separation between the free exercise of religion and any state-established religion. That's it. Everything else is agenda-driven narrative. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This episode also used Thomas Jefferson's misunderstood letter to the Danbury Baptists from the Washington, Jefferson, and Madison Institute website. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. My chair is creaking on the floor. I was on with Brian, TNT Radio, so that's on my Facebook page, and I'll put it at the Action Radio group, which is public, so everybody can see that. I haven't seen the video yet. I did with James Gunvig. And so I was on with him yesterday too, talking about Action Radio, talking about our bills and everything else. But besides the fact that we're getting fabulous interviews now, as we head for you know, huge national prominence, we also have affiliates, and they all have the same discount code WYL, which is Write Your Laws. And so we have MyPillow, we have Grace Care, and we have we've had for a while Strike Force. So I'm going to play. I made a little promos for them too. So I'm going to play those and be back in just a couple minutes.
Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments, and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Grace Care. And now as an affiliate of Grace Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Grace Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is gracecare.com. That's G-R-A-I-T-H-care.com. You can email them at gracecare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Grace Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engine. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. Wow. Real commercials. We're getting the big time, Pianki. We got three affiliates now. So three ways for people to save money. So we're catching on. You know, it's only a matter of time before, you know, Mike Lindell himself, you know, drops into our radio show and we're going to have a little chat. So it's all happening. Everything's happening. Citizen legislation's catching on. I did two shows yesterday. Both those hosts wanted to start writing their own bills. You know, Brian McCabe and James Goodbig. And so things are happening. Pianki.
Well, that letter that Jefferson wrote to Danbury is very, very important. It's one of the, I think, one of the most prestigious writings that one could read and understand.
Mm-hmm. But nobody ever reads the letter that the Danbury Baptists wrote to Jefferson, so they have no context for what he's talking about. They've just stolen the separation of church and state without knowing that the Danbury Baptists were being discriminated against because they weren't Congregationalists. And Connecticut at the time made congregation, whatever it is, church, the official church of Connecticut. That's why they needed to that's what the Danbury Baptists asked. You know, the government can't do that. Government can't have an established religion. That's where the First Amendment came from. But people don't understand that. So they don't understand the context of the letter that the Baptists wrote to Jefferson. Everybody gets the answer, but they don't know the question. I find that fascinating.
And especially the application of the Bill of Rights, too, and who they was really meant for.
Who was it really meant for? It was meant for us.
Against who?
Against the government. It's a prohibition against government from making laws that go against our rights. You know, which...
Absolutely. People don't understand that.
No, they also don't understand
that
when Brandon... go ahead.
When we talk about that candidates should have the citizenship test, basically what it goes out to achieve the citizenship test, the same should be also a requirement for candidates and people of other positions that's going to be affecting and have the possibility of affecting individuals and their civil and constitutional protected rights. Because they don't know it, and we see many cases where it's misused.
Mm-hmm. We can make it for government employees. But here's the problem, though. And I discovered this yesterday when I found this group, the Constitutional Rights Foundation. You've got a group of leftists that are miseducating people about the Constitution, talking about your rights and responsibilities. Well, that comes right out of the UN Declaration of Human Rights. You know, they're saying the rights are human rights. In other words, they apply to everybody equally. And everybody has a right to everybody else's stuff. You know, and so a person in Vietnam would have a right to your house because, well, they're human. So they're people. They're people too. So, you know, and that's that whole bogus theory from the UN.
Some of those liberals, that's what some of those libertarians believe too, open borders. But see, the reason why come they're able to get away with that is because parents don't know any better themselves. It's just like me teaching you that, look, if you're going down the highway and you miss a turn, just put your transmission selector in reverse, and then when it stops, go backwards. You don't have to put on the brakes. And if you don't know no better, well, of course, you're going to do such a travesty to your vehicle.
Yes, your transmission in various pieces is left on the highway. Well, I think most cars will stall up before that happens.
So yeah, I'm a strong believer.
Go ahead.
In much of the problems that we talk about and we identify and see, I keep saying that people have the power to change that. They just don't utilize it. We talk about that with a couple of your guests on Friday all the time. Seem like everybody knows what's wrong, but they are reluctant to take those steps in order to correct the things by the application of the powers that they have.
Yeah. Jim made a good point though about making the mandatory the citizenship test. You know, when the Constitution clearly spells out eligibility. So that's an interesting question. Now the question is, we're not changing eligibility. We're just saying that people have to take this test. So we test their knowledge, and I don't know what'd be interesting. We got to wrestle with that one a little bit. I'll have to talk to Amber and see what she says. I mean, he makes a valid point that the Constitution lays out those who are eligible to run, or the qualifications. You have to be a certain age, and you have to be an American citizen and natural born for president. And so that's in the Constitution. So if we said you also have to take a citizenship, you know, immigration test, so we know what you know about the Constitution, is that going to be constitutional, or does it have to be done by the states? Or is it going to be a voluntary thing that's just a really good thing to do? Or I don't know. I don't know how that's going to shake out now because that adds a variable.
Well, I can tell you how I think it should be done. One thing, it should be mandatory in schools. The topics and the material of the three that you mentioned in your reading, that should be mandatory for American citizens. It should be mandatory to graduate from one level of grade to another attainment. And then that would help alleviate the problems of people not knowing their responsibilities and their limitations when they reach these positions if they so seek them.
Yeah, but the problem comes in with the details, the teaching. You know, what if you have teachers that are teaching that the Second Amendment, you know, really is talking about a well-regulated, in other words, a well-controlled militia, and that it really is not an individual right, it's a collective right. And then the ACLU makes this case all the time. It's a collective right, so you don't have an individual right to even bear arms. It really is, you know, a government collective right as long as you're in a militia. You know, and of course you say, well, the Supreme Court just ruled otherwise. They say, okay, well, yeah, well, that's just a temporary aberration. That's a problem. But what it really means is, you know, I mean, you don't know what they're going to teach kids. And then kids are going to, they're going to be in doubt. They're going to go, well, is that an individual right or a collective right? Even though there's no such thing as a collective right. That defeats the purpose of a right. If it's collective, it's not a right. It's a privilege, you know, ordained by government, you know, and limited by government.
So that's why you have to have formulated curriculums, formulated material. And even today, when school districts switch from one material on social studies to another, book companies are invited to bring in the material that they would like to sell to the district and put it on display where it can be observed and examined by teachers, parents, and stakeholders and anyone else, and leave comment on what they think about that particular material. And based on those comments, they decide on which would be best for the school district. So, yes, it's ways to do it. We just have to, you know, put our foot forward.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust schools to do it. I think parents should do it. You know, if we can bring back, you know, Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts in a traditional fashion, they did it. You know, there are a lot of places that taught, you know, Constitution. Eddie the Eagle program, you know, kids and rifles, they teach it. You know, there's just so many places that the kids can learn this, but most of those are being taken away. You know, especially as we change, you know, when you take like the conversation we're having with Dorothy Diana, that, you know, you're stripping away of the identity. You know, you strip away sex identity. You know, are you male or female? You strip away you know, a preference, you know, heterosexual or homosexual. You strip away national identity. I mean, that's stripped away too. You know, we're in a country of racists. You know, this started by slavery. You know, the basis of the United States is that. And you say, wait a minute, that's not true. But eventually, sooner or later, you strip, you know, people of their national identity because they don't want to be nationalists. God forbid we should be nationalists. Like, I don't know, FDR was a nationalist. You know, Kennedy was a nationalist. A lot of nationalists on all sides of the political spectrum. But that becomes a dirty word because you're a nationalist. And then that translates to being a white nationalist. Well, you don't want to be that. You know, you can't love the United States because that makes you a white supremacist. You know, and this is how all this stuff goes. So they systematically remove everything that we taught that was good and wholesome and wonderful and, you know, pride in our nation and pride in yourself. And you're an individual and you have individual rights. And individual rights are absolute, obviously. Otherwise, they're not rights at all. They're privileges by the government. You know, and people, but they don't
absolutely
hear that. But they have to hear that.
And the ACLU is wrong when they want to take individual. When you stand before your creator on judgment day, you're not answering to what Greg does. You're not answering to what Josie does or Brandon do. You're answering to what you've done. It's individual accountability. You're not accountable for the group. You're accountable for your individual actions.
And you're not accountable to the group either. See, that's the other problem. And this is what I discovered when I worked with Jen Clark in Australia on the Australian Bill of Individual Rights. And we specifically said individual rights because you look at the rights bill that they pursued in Australia before, it's based on the UN, the UN Declaration of Human Rights. That's what most people think. They think of it as a charter, a government charter of rights. Well, if it's a government charter, it's not rights because that's the government telling you what you can do. And then they say rights and responsibilities, and they include these things together. In other words, you have a right of free speech as long as you don't offend somebody because that's your responsibility. And so they convert and pervert the idea of rights into something completely different. You know, it's like that thing yesterday from the Constitutional Rights Foundation. You know, kids are taught the value of democracy. Of course, we're a republic. And they're taught the value of service and how to be part of the community and how to be proactive and all that kind of stuff. Well, that's creating socialists. That's creating people that serve the community and serve the group. Well, we're not about serving the group. We're about individual achievement, the rights of the individual. Nothing was ever accomplished by a group.
But if I say something, if I say something that offends you as being my opinion, it's not what I say. It's how you are refusing to accept that I have the right to my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I say all the time on this show, and you know, Dorothy's new, but she'll get the hang of it very quickly. That disagreeing on this show is part of the show, and it's not an issue. You know, it causes us more interesting discussions. You know, because I want to know, why do you disagree? Well, what's your thought process? What's going on in your mind, different from what's going on in my mind? You know, where do we agree? You know, so to me, disagreement is absolutely essential for any understanding of anything. If we all agreed, we'd never go anywhere. We'd sit around and agree with each other. Well, that's not going to teach us anything. You know, but people think that disagreement is somehow offensive, and it's not. It's actually necessary. It is necessary to have people in your life that disagree with you. Otherwise, how do you know what you're thinking is true? How do you challenge your own feelings? If you think you're absolutely right and nobody disagrees with you, you know, that's where all the problems come in. That's how dictators work. Well, they surround themselves with people that agree with them. Why? Because if not, the dictator's going to kill them. So, of course, they're going to agree with them. But that doesn't give you a realistic picture. It doesn't give you a perspective. You know, I count on people disagreeing with me. How do you think I get anything done around here? That's how. Well, agreement helps too sometimes. Well, but you know what I'm saying?
Anything that bring about the conversation and the expression of opinion. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that teased me off is when people want you to sit down and compromise on something that is quite obvious and straightforward as mm-hmm. what we read in our Bill of Rights. It's obvious. It's straightforward. It is mm-hmm. uno a number one. Now that's where you begin to apply your lifelong efforts and goals mm-hmm. based on it. We're not supposed to compromise the takeaway. God mm-hmm. say, thou shalt not kill. Well,
actually, it's murder. It's thou shalt not murder. Because if we weren't supposed to kill, we'd never have meat on the table. We wouldn't have plants on the table either, quite honestly. You know, you wouldn't have food
and
on your table.
That's a good point.
Because plants are killed and animals are killed. Everything. Here's the question for God someday. If I can ask God, you know, why did you set up a system where everything has to kill something else in order to survive? This whole planet is based on killing other things in order to survive. Look at the ocean. They figure only 1 in 10,000, you know, life forms, you know, survives not being eaten. So that means you have a 9,999 chance out of 10,000 of being eaten. Well, those aren't really good odds. It's like everything in the ocean eats something. Or everything else, you know. So,
have you ever heard
how,
of the 42 Declarations of Innocence?
No, I haven't.
42 Declarations. The 42 Declaration of Innocence come mm-hmm. out of what we call ancient Egyptian texts. Those okay. societies at that time, and the premise was that when you came before your Creator, mm-hmm. and you're supposed to recite, "I have not." Rather than in the Christian doctrine, thou shall not. See, I have not is revealing what you have not done upon mm-hmm. that moment that you standing there to be judged. But thou shall not always gives you an open door to go out and do it and come back and say later on that I won't do it, but although you have done it. So there's a difference. And how
well that's forgiveness.
People express themselves along those lines.
Yeah. So let me understand this because this is interesting. But thou shalt is actually a warning ahead of time. It's not a thing that you say after you've done it. If you say thou shalt murder and you've already committed a murder, it's too late. It's already happened. So you can't say, okay, I won't murder. It doesn't make sense. You know. So how does this work in Egyptian?
Right.
You know.
And if you're there to be judged on your life should be have a consideration of what you have not done that mm-hmm. would violate the holy doctrines of telling you how to live your life. I have not made someone mad. I mm-hmm. have not befouled my neighbor's wife. Not that you won't do it, but you haven't done it. And from at this point in time, you're being judged. So
that's to be admitted into adulthood or admitted into a church, or do you do this, you know, as a young person?
That's going on into the afterlife.
Is it like a confirmation? Okay. So before you go to the afterlife, so this is your judgment. So this is at any point in your life or when you become an adult, you want to declare these things, I have not done and I won't?
That's when you're getting ready to cross over. And the funny thing, they have what they call netters. They have 12 netters that's going to judge you. and your heart is on a scale with that a feather, an ostrich feather. If your heart is lighter than the feather, then you have a clean heart. If your heart is heavier than the feather, then you have problems. You will be devoured. You will be devoured by the beast that's sitting there. You either go on or you're devoured by the beast. All this is depicted in paintings. There was no Polaroids back then. This is paintings.
Yeah. See, this is interesting. It's amazing how many religions have very similar views. And I've always, much to the angst of my Christian friends, that I don't think God would have created a society with multiple religions if only one of them could go to heaven. That never made sense to me.
No, he said he was jealous, right?
Well, he did. Yeah, but that's in the King James Bible. We need Wendy for this conversation. This is a God talk conversation. We should bring this up tomorrow. Because what it sounds like when you say you have not done and you're declaring that you won't as you cross over into the next life, it doesn't seem like there's a concept of forgiveness. And that's what separates like the Old Testament from the New Testament. Jesus brought forgiveness. He said, okay, you've done wrong. Go forward and sin no more and don't do it again. Okay, fine. And so that's a whole different concept. I don't hear forgiveness in this concept of the 42 declarations. I mean, if you do,
no, there's not forgiveness. Talk about what you've done and what
you've
done.
Old. That sounds
is
old.
Written in the book.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Definitely have to change the title of the show today. We're not even going to get to my topic, which is fine. It is more fun. It's more fun to get these spontaneous things out.
Well, yeah, it is. And that's the whole thing about learning. That's why I'm so against this critical race theory, because basically all this doing is slanting a perception or how people have experienced to one side, as if they're the only one that have experienced the things that they complain about. It's just not true.
Why are teachers refusing to teach this? Who benefits? I mean, are they being paid to teach it? Who in their right mind would teach that one race is better than another and that one race is victims and one race is oppressors?
Unless you've got people that believe that to the hilt, Greg, you really do.
No, I understand but a decent teacher, someone that actually had values, and valued the individuality of their students, what you're saying is that there is no individuality. And if you're able to teach critical race theory, you're able to teach, I don't know what, eugenics? What else are you able to teach? Slavery, certain people should be slaves, and maybe we should put white people in slavery and to make up for black people being in slavery. I mean, is that talked about? Just so they know how
they
it
like
feels?
To say that black people's history didn't begin in slavery, but guess what? People what you call black did not begin here in the United States. So let's go back and look at what they was already accustomed to, used to, and had been exposed to way long before they met anyone that looked like Greg. Let's look at that.
Yeah.
They don't want
to. So in Africa, I haven't been to Africa yet. I'd love to go. I think it'd be fascinating. But you have a country that's, most countries are 95, 98, 99% black. Do people, and I think we talked about this before, but black Africans don't think of themselves as black when the whole continent's black, except for certain areas, European colony areas, like South Africa, places like that. But, if you're in a predominantly black country, do people talk about themselves as being black? I mean, that doesn't seem an absurd concept.
No, they don't describe themselves as that. It's getting a little bit more into detail.
Yeah.
So, no, but, the conversation was good today, and I really love that piece, and I could listen to it to 1,000 times about Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, that's one of the good really ones I made. I stayed with the Founding Fathers. Now, I'm a little behind on mine. I have to do one on Federalist number 13. Things are getting so busy with the show, though, I have not been able to do these because I don't want to do them. I want to do them justice. I could make a shorter one, but it wouldn't be accurate and wouldn't be precise. And fortunately, I have some time this week. We don't have hardly any – I don't think I have any guests this week. It's just us. so I can chat, so I get a chance to do more of those. If you have a topic or a suggestion for me, things, something, you know, outside the Federalist Papers, you know, any of the founding documents you think I should cover. I mean, the Danbury letter was fascinating. I did that report years ago on WEBY, you know, because nobody was, I said, well, you know, I read Jefferson and I said, Jefferson answered the Danbury Baptist question. And then of course, my first thought is, well, what was the question? You know, and people are like, what do you mean, what is the question? And his answer was the separation of church and state. Well, what was the question? Well, I don't know. Well, then you can't understand the answer. And that's how my mind works. You know, you've got to go for, it's like when I discovered the 2017 pandemic severity guide or pandemic guidelines, 2017. I said, well, that's interesting. That's 3 months after Trump took office, April 21st. And it called for lockdowns and masks and school closures and, you know, work closures and all kinds of things like stay-at-home programs and everything else. And there was no threshold. I'm looking at this going, wow, lockdowns. This is where they get it from. So my first thought is, well, what were the guidelines before these? So I went back and found that there were 2007 guidelines, 10 years earlier. And what were those guidelines? Pandemic severity index, 5 categories. You know, no lockdowns until you get at least a category 4, which is upwards of 1.8 million people killed by the pandemic virus, not with it, but from it. Totally different thought process. So of the first 3 categories, you know, categories 1 and 2, like 90,000 up through, I forgot what the other one was. It's like 90, 250, you know, 90 for the first category, up to 250 for the second, up to 400,000 for the third. I think the fourth was up to 1.8 million. And then the last one was above 1.8 million. However it worked, I forgot. Anyway, point being that they had different categories. So that you couldn't have done a lockdown under the 2007 guidelines. And so you had at least over 1 million people killed before you had the first lockdown. Well, the government, you know, the people that planned the pandemic knew that. So the fact that they changed the guidelines for the pandemic in 2017, saying there is no threshold for lockdowns, we can lock down immediately, means they already knew what they were going to do in 2017 and probably way before that. But that's when they first showed their hand by changing the guidelines, by taking away the pandemic severity index. That's how I knew this thing was all planned and all a hoax. You know, back in early 2020, as soon as I found the old guidelines. You know, people never ask the question. They never do the follow-up. They never look beyond that initial whatever they see. They'll see the guidelines and go, great. Well, that's nice. Well, what happened in the previous ones? Well, I don't know. Well, why don't you know? You know, I want to ask Trump that question if I get him on the show. Did you know about the 2007, you know, guidelines and the pandemic severity index that would have made the response to COVID completely different than it was with the new 2017 guidelines? I would like to know if he knows about those. I don't think he does. We've never mentioned them.
Well, there is, with the advent of Donald Trump, it has opened the eyes of many people.
Mm-hmm.
And also has brought out the inner feelings of many people. I mean, you still see that today, like I was telling you how Herschel Walker, mm-hmm. a black man who's running for U.S. Senator for the state of Georgia,
mm-hmm.
as a conservative, how he is being attacked and leveled with all sort of innuendos and names and deplorable notions by black people themselves. So you have to ask.
Why are black conservatives such a threat to black people?
What are their intentions? White supremacy? Yeah. Black supremacy? Is mm-hmm. that what their intentions are?
Yeah, but it's you know, it's like the best, you know, if you're black, being a black liberal is okay and you're celebrated. If you're black and a black conservative, you're demonized, but you're still black in both cases. And yet people think of this great skin color identification, but it's really not. It's really an ideological, in you know, identification using skin color as an excuse or as a part of the process or a weapon in the process. Because skin color really doesn't matter if Herschel Walker can be demonized and Reverend Al Sharpton can be lauded as a hero, you know, or George Floyd's a hero and, I don't know, Larry Elders is a white supremacist, even though he's black. So the difference in treatment is so vast that it really has nothing to do with skin color, it seems.
Well, it's this notion, and it's been going on for a long time, and it has evolved and re-evolved in many different forms, that quote-unquote non-white skinned people are a separate mm-hmm. nation in this country.
You know, it's interesting. It'd be interesting if our original folks, American Indians, so anybody who's not of our skin group, you know, has to leave too. You know, well, that's absurd. You know, we've been here, so the Europeans have been here. You know, okay, well, what, you know, I mean, how far does this go? You know, identification by skin color, number, you know, what is a white nation anyway?
It doesn't stop because it just keeps on evolving to something else. Yeah. Like I tell you, when I was a kid, what mm-hmm. words that I heard then and now are two different things. You wouldn't even recognize them.
Hmm.
So this attack has been leveraged against the white male
mm-hmm.
and continued attack against whites. And you can see the physical attacks that's going on, the assaults, the batteries, the criminal directions of elements direction. You wouldn't have never thought of that, you know, in recent past. But these people have been emboldened by the likes of your Maxine Waters and others, and now you have what you have.
Well,
it's going to resolve to some point pretty soon.
Well, it's really crazy because you've got all these folks being released. You've got liberal black city or liberal cities, you know, and you've got DAs, extremely liberal, releasing criminals, you know, and it's just you've got kids committing all kinds of crimes and they can do whatever they want. We've got police assassinations. We just had one in Indiana. I got a question on Indiana. It seems like there's an awful lot of crime there right now. I'm going to look into whether they
in
have
Chicago,
I was thinking Indiana particularly. If you were Brandon and you wanted to introduce a bunch of illegal aliens to white America, you know, what better place to put them than Indiana? Just
yeah.
a thought.
Even with Kim Fox, the Cook County prosecutor, she had more members that's jumping ship on her, too. They can't work under her direction.
Yeah.
So
I can investigate these areas that have high crime. I'm wondering how many, if they're getting a bunch of illegal aliens, and that's just not being reported. Great show. Thanks very much. Appreciate it. We'll do it again tomorrow. Oh, boy. This is an interesting day. And so I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And we'll be back tomorrow with another totally different show, totally different reporters, totally different everything. Every day is different here at Action Radio. But if you want to, again, the website for the show is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. We have live chat. We have a Skype line you can call from anywhere in the world. If you want to contribute to us, you can do that at, let me find my little thing here, paypal.com/paypalme/actionradio. Better, though, if you're a corporation or an individual that wants to either have promotions or ads that we can place here, that's greg@writeyourlaws.com is my email. We've got our three affiliates now, MyPillow, Great Care, and Strike Force Energy Drinks. And they all have the same promo code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. And our legislation is at writeyourlaws.com. That's www.writeyourlaws, writeyourlaws.com. Back tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock a.m. Central Time with another exciting episode, as they say, where I have no idea what's going to happen. I have no idea today. I got to change the title of the show because what we ended up talking about had nothing. We never even got to our topic du jour. So, but that's how things go around here. It's better to be impulsive and spontaneous than it is to be, you know, format. All right. Tomorrow. See you later.